11-2012, council management priorities behind tab number one. It's document number three for council members. I'll turn it over to Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The executive committee met on November 1st to develop a straw man for the council to vote on and approve priorities today. What I'll go through is those items that the executive committee is recommending that the council take for action, those items that the executive committee is recommending that the council do not take for action, and there are also five other items, Karen, and what I'd like to do is I go through the five other items. If you could post them on the board, that would be great, and then if the council has any other items that they want to bring up, we could put it under other so that we'd have one huge list of action items. Okay. The first recommended items, groundfish, very top priority, prepare framework 46 for specs for 20 stocks for 2012-14. Address the outstanding AMs for ocean pout, window pane flounder, and halibut. Consider eliminating Georges Bank access area, yellowtail flounder, 10% cap. Consider allocating 100% of the scallop fishery, estimated yellowtail flounder catch to the scallop fishery. The second item recommended by the executive committee is to prepare an amendment to address state permit bank issues. We discussed that at executive committee and felt that there's been an awful lot of interaction between the states and NIMS with the permit banks and very little action by the council. So we asked the service if they could take the lead in developing that amendment, and they will do most of the legwork, but the council will be voting on it. So any votes on that amendment will be brought to the council. Third action that they recommend is prepare an amendment to consider fleet diversity and accumulation caps. And lastly, the executive committee is recommending that the committee hold a workshop or a review with the sector leadership to look at how the first year went with sectors and to make any recommendations to the council for future action. Under monkfish, it's recommended that we complete Framework 7, and that final vote will be at the January Council meeting for the specs for 2011-13, and that we also continue Monkfish Amendment 6, which is the development of catch share programs such as sectors and IFQs. Under whiting and skates, there would be one committee, a whiting skate committee, and that action would be prepare an amendment to set the ACLs and AMs and the spec packages for whiting for 2012-14. There's a data pool workshop that's going to be conducted next month, and right after we get the data, we'll start the amendment and get that implemented in 2000 and get that submitted in 2011. That's a requirement under Magnuson to set those ACLs and AMs for whiting, which we have not done yet. And the second thing that the executive committee recommends is that we prepare the skate specifications for 2012 and 2013. Scallops, the executive committee is recommending that we prepare framework 23 to address the requirement for turtle excluder dredge and also review and revise the yellowtail AM that was recently submitted in Amendment 15. Habitat, continue with the omnibus habitat amendment. We're scheduling a peer review of the SASE model in January or February, and following that peer review, we'll get cranking on implementing the final stages of the habitat amendment with the approved peer review of the science. And also continue to conduct ecosystem-based fisheries management planning. In herring, continue Amendment 5 to include monitoring mackerel, river herring bycatch, criteria for access to closed areas, and protection of spawning aggregations. Research steering, continue to steer research and support our plans. SSC, continue to support SOC activities. Enforcement Safety Committee continue to review our management actions and provide comments on safety and enforceability, make timely reports to the council. And the Executive Committee also discussed scheduling a second Catch Shares workshop. This Catch Shares workshop would have a different focus than the first one. It would be primarily concerned with community impacts. The first Catch Share workshop we had, we basically engaged all the decision makers, invited council members, SSC members, AP members, the council decision-making body. And in this workshop, it would be primarily for communities and industry, and we'd look at goals and objectives, issues and recommendations for Catch Share programs, including community fishing associations, private and state permit banks, and how our communities are impacted from Catch Shares. So those were all above the line or recommended as a straw man for you to consider from the Executive Committee. Those things that they did not recommend go forward were the old interspecies committee priorities. The first priority was to develop goals and objectives, issues and recommendations to consolidate our FMPs. That was a priority last year, and they don't recommend going forward. However, it is noted that there was some work done on consolidating FMPs, and there was a motion presented to the council that passed 17-0 that said pursue consolidation of multi-species skate and monkfish FMPs and reach out to the MID for consultation on monkfish. So there was some indication that the council would move forward with that, but it's not being recommended at this time by Executive Committee. Two, deal with issue of sector annual catch share entitlements. That was a priority initially under interspecies last year, and develop a strategy including goals and objectives, issues and recommendation to improve monitoring in all FMPs. Same thing as that. That was a priority last year, but was dismissed. Groundfish, there are several items left over that are not recommended to be considered in 2011. One is define the general category fishery, scallop IFQ fishery, as an other subcomponent of the groundfish catch ACLs. Another action not recommended is revise, eliminate the Georges Bank closed areas for both groundfish fishing by sector vessels and for access by scallop vessels. A third action not recommended is to eliminate the Category B Day at Sea program. A fourth action is develop limited entry in the party charter boat fleet, not recommended. And follow-on from Amendment 16, there were some follow-on items that never got addressed, and at one point the council recommended they be addressed in a future amendment, and that would be the point system, area management, and IFQ proposals in groundfish, and that was not recommended. Another action not recommended is to prepare a hagfish fishery management plan. Another action is to prepare an amendment for limited entry. The council felt that the committee, executive committee, felt that these things should be below the line. Now, Karen, on other, if you would list these things, there are some other action items that were not considered by the executive committee. Either they didn't vote to have it above or below the line, or they came in recently before this meeting. One of them is a pilot leasing program. That would have to be an amendment, so an amendment to prepare a pilot leasing program. Another action item with no recommendation, there's two motions from the scallop committee that occurred after our executive committee meeting. One motion was to separate state waters and federal waters management in the northern Gulf of Maine for scallops, and that was by the scallop committee. And another action was recommended by the scallop AP, and that was to limit or redirect open area effort on concentrations of small scallops in lieu of a closure. Okay, that's under other and was not even before the executive committee. A third item would be a small dredge to view the small dredge program that's currently in place in Scallops. That was a letter from Ray Starish. A fourth action item is the Haddock cap, increase the Haddock cap. We've got letters from ASMFC, an emergency action request from Mary Beth Tooley, and a letter from the Mass DMF. So that would be a action that has not been considered by an executive committee, increase the Haddock cap. We should also talk about that emergency action at the same time, I would think. And lastly, the fifth item is to extend in Groundfish, to extend the 2 weeks there's currently a 2 week reconciliation of the books for sectors, and we've received correspondence that asked that we extend that 2 week reconciliation period an additional 2 weeks. Now, in talking to staff, I think that the Groundfish Committee voted to send a letter to the region on that it might not need to be a priority, but if it needs action to extend it 2 weeks, we do have correspondence that is asking us to consider that. So those are five other things in addition to anything else the council wants to consider for priorities.
Okay, that's a lot of information. I think we'll start with looking at the draft management priorities forwarded by the executive committee first. Take questions on that or comments. And then we can get into the motions to amend and further clarify. David?
Yes, on the preparing the ACLs and AMs for Whiting, if the only way to have accountability measures is to have limited entry, if this passes as written, will we be specifically prohibited from doing that, or would the committee be allowed to pursue that as a necessary means of putting in accountability measures?
Well, I would say that'll be defined today when we identify our priorities, but I would think there's other ways to go about creating accountability without limited entry. You could just put a hard tack on the fishery.
There's a lot of ways to do it, but for the people that are in the whiting fishery, that may not be a very suitable answer. So that's why I'm asking if we'll be specifically prohibited from pursuing whatever's the best, as long as it doesn't hold up the amendment.
I mean, that would have to be debated here today and defined today before we leave this agenda item. Anyone else on the council? Dr. Pierce?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for further guidance. Perhaps I misunderstood you. You said that you're looking for comments regarding all these particular executive committee recommendations. You're not looking for any motions regarding moving something below the line or above the line. Am I correct?
I started with comments and questions on the slate forwarded by the executive committee.
Okay.
And we had one question from David. I asked if there was anyone else that had any more questions of clarification before we get into the process of motion making and amending and moving things up and below, up and down the line.
Okay, question then.
David?
Question slash clarification. On Groundfish, prepare framework 46. Okay, the timing of that would be obviously after framework 45. So framework 46, the anticipated, expected, hoped for implementation date would be May 1 of 2012. So if we make any modifications to the Groundfish section relative to framework 46, we must do so with an understanding that at the earliest it would be for May 1, 2012 implementation. Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or clarification? Mary Beth?
If Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under groundfish number four, conduct a lessons learned review workshop the first year of sector operations with sector representatives. Is that work that you would envision for the committee or the council? Is it like a one-day workshop?
That would be run out of the committee.
For the committee to
do? For the committee to inform their deliberations, yep.
All right, thanks.
Anything further from the council on the slate forwarded by the executive committee? Dr. Pierce.
Sorry, you had to come back to me, Mr. Chairman. Again, a clarification. Under the other, below the line, the executive committee recommendations as to what should be below the line, it would be helpful to me if the executive committee could provide a bit more explanation regarding why it did not feel it was appropriate to have above the line revise, eliminate the Georges Bank closed areas for access by the scarlet vessels. Was there any specific discussion related to that? Because I thought we were going in that direction.
You're speaking about number two, underground fish.
Number two, right? Number two, underground fish.
Yeah, my memory is that we felt the habitat omnibus amendment was going to address that issue.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, and
sure.
The schedule again for the omnibus amendment is when 2018.
2018? Is that what you said?
When might it be?
It's in our timelines, in our binder, and I'm going to look it up.
Thank you.
Because I don't want to misspeak. Currently, implementation is slated for June of 2012.
Oh. Okay, to be revised.
Probably. Doug?
So is it my understanding, by not putting this on our priorities, that since some of these are habitat closures and they're also mortality closures, as far as I understand it, within the groundfish plan, so that if we were to say the omnibus amendment recommends changes to those specific areas, that it would take a follow-up amendment or maybe in a framework to change those areas from a groundfish mortality reduction. So we're looking at, instead of doing things simultaneously, we're going to do them sequentially. Is that your intent, the intent of the executive committee?
Yeah, part of the discussion was not that the executive committee doesn't think this is worth doing, but it doesn't prioritize well with the other things on the table. And in terms of the amount of effort and workload to do that, one of the questions that comes up right away is, if you don't have groundfish closed areas, how do you address herring vessels in closed areas? You know, is that going to create a follow-on action to herring? There's just a number of things that need to be looked at if you eliminate groundfish closed areas, including how does it address mortality of groundfish? And that workload is huge compared to, you know, Framework 46 and the other amendments about everything else. So it's a significant, significant workload to do that.
Jimmy? No? Any other questions on the slate? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to forward the priorities. Jimmy?
Well, I'd like to make a motion to amend priority number one.
Let's have a motion.
And that motion.
Sorry, Jimmy. I think the cleanest way to do it would be to actually have a motion to accept these, and then we can begin to tinker with it.
Okay.
You can make it knowing you're going to amend it later if you want.
So I'll make a motion to accept the prior. I feel bad saying.
Doug?
I'll make a motion to accept the priorities as set forward by the executive committee here.
Is there a second? Seconded by Sally McGee. Discussion on the motion? Jimmy? Looking for discussion on the motion. Mary Beth?
Just to clarify the process that you want to use here, we have the motion to accept, and then you would be, if there were interest, looking for amendments to that motion. Is that correct?
Right. So now we actually have a motion that has a list of priorities, and now individual council members can ask questions or make amendments to that list, and eventually we'll find a place where we're comfortable and we can pull the trigger and move forward. Jimmy?
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to amend priority number one to prepare framework 46 specs. And on that priority after consider, I'd like to delete the rest of that sentence and insert revise, eliminate Georgia's Bank mortality reduction closed areas for groundfish and scallop vessels, period. You can't follow that? Okay. If you can go back to groundfish action number one. Oh, if you could put it, can you put it up there? I'm asking if you can put, you had it up there in the previous slide, if you could put up item number one under groundfish.
You're looking for on the main motion, item number one on the main motion?
Right.
That's what, Karen, can you go to the main motion that we had before, the executive committee's prioritization? I think Jim would like to edit off of number one,
right,
under groundfish.
The approved ones.
The chart.
Not that one, the chart.
I can read the whole motion. I can read all of it.
The chart.
This here. Okay.
I'll just read the whole thing and see if I can try it that way.
I think what Karen's done is moved the item that was below the line applied it.
Different.
It sounds like you have something
just,
different.
Yeah, I'll just read it. And okay. the motion is going to be that number one under groundfish will be prepare framework 46 specs, OFLs, ABCs, ACLs for 20 stocks, 2012-2014. Address outstanding AMs for ocean pout, window pane flounder, and halibut. Consider revising, eliminating Georgia's Bank mortality reduction closed areas for groundfish and scallop vessels, period. Get it?
And scallop vessels, yeah. Period. Is that your motion, Jim?
That's the motion.
Is there a second to the motion to amend? Mary Beth, discussion on the motion to amend? Jim?
The rationale is that this would happen hopefully by the beginning of the fishing year 2012. We no longer need mortality reductions in this fisheries. We need to start achieving OY in both the groundfish and the scallop fisheries. There's millions of dollars worth of scallops, hung up in these areas, and we need to, I just feel we need to move this along to reach OI. I don't want to depend on the Habitat Committee, because this isn't separate from Habitat. The Habitat can still finish its work, do its thing, deal with adjusting the Habitat closures. This has nothing to do with that. This is mortality closures that are no longer needed, and we're well below OI. Looks like we're going to catch 10-12% of the haddock for the year, maybe 20%. And we've got all this scallops up there. So that's the rationale for the motion. Thank you.
Mary Beth?
Well, I certainly support the motion. I did second it. I would support it even more if it had no reference to eliminating the closed areas for groundfish and scallops and just eliminating the closed areas. I don't know why you want to maintain groundfish mortality closures that ground fishermen can fish in and other people can't. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know if the maker of the motion would consider just eliminating the groundfish of the George's Bank mortality closures, period.
Anyone else on the council? Jimmy, do you have a comment?
Well, I could accept that as a friendly motion. I mean, as friendly perfection, because it does the same thing.
Karen, so now apparently we're going to strike reference to groundfish and scallop vessels and just eliminate closed areas by 2012. Dave Gaethel.
Mortality reduction closed areas.
Yeah, my question is this doable in a framework, and doesn't this cut across a whole host of management plans? This seems more than a simple change in the rules.
Tom Neese?
Well, I think the question that we're going to have to wrestle with is not whether this can be done in a framework, though Gene may want to weigh in on that as well. I believe our frameworkable measures includes general language about changing closed areas, so that may cover it. But I think an issue we're going to have to wrestle with the service a little bit is to figure out whether it needs an EIS in order to do this. It's not going to be an easy thing to do. I think people need to realize that, and that this will severely constrain what other groundfish issues you might be able to address this year. There are a lot of issues that are going to have to be thought of very carefully. One is that while we may not need mortality closures, there may be an interest in having spawning closures that replace them, which is work that we're going to have done, or at least consider. The other is there's a lot of impacts that are going to have to be analyzed that could be difficult. I think to get this done, ready to submit by, you know, December of this year in 10 or 11 months is going to be a big task, which is basically going to tie your hands on other groundfish things you may or may not want to do. And I don't know if Gene wants to weigh in on whether it can be done in a framework or not. I'm frankly not sure.
So just so I'm clear, Tom, on your comments, if this were to be part of the framework, assuming it can be done in a framework and the council decides that it wants to do it in the framework and have it done in time to have the new ACLs ready for the fishery in 2012, then you're saying that the other items under groundfish action may need to drop out, such as dealing with fleet diversity and accumulation caps, conducting a lessons learned workshop, and I guess the State Permit Bank issue, NIMS is going to take the lead on that, so that may be able to stay on the list. But putting other groundfish items into the pile with this isn't realistic.
But this is a big job. I mean, people got to realize this is a big job. This is not just a one paragraph that says we get rid of the groundfish closed areas and that's all we got to do. I expect that there's going to be a lot of interest in maintaining the areas for other reasons besides mortality closures that are going to have to be addressed and analyzed and thought of and brought up. You're going to have to consider whether you think there is a need for spawning closures or closures for other reasons besides mortality closures, whether they're in the same areas or not on George's Bank. There's some questions, for example, closed area 2 right now has got the overwhelming amount of the biomass for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. We don't really know why, you know, but we're going to have to analyze the impacts of allowing fishing in there year-round and whether that's an issue or not on a stock that we're trying to rebuild. The ABC's ACL work alone is going to be pretty complicated to do because this is the first time we've had to do it without an assessment done recently. So there's a lot of work, I think, which may not fall on the PDT or the staff. It may be picked up by the Science Center, but there's still a lot of work that's going to have to be done on that. I think the other priorities you're going to have to take a hard look at. I am skeptical whether you can do all this, do a lot of the other things that are being suggested, let's say for scallops, do the accumulation caps, and get that all done by May 1st of 2012. You know, if you're willing to stretch some of this out for a longer time period, it might be a different story. But, you know, right now we're looking at this as a one-year project.
Thanks, Tom. Discussion on the motion to amend. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may ask the proposer just a question. You eliminated the consideration of the 10% yellowtail flounder cap and the 100% scallop fishery estimated yellow flounder catch. Was that because your thinking was that accessing these areas would increase the CPU for the scallop fishery and minimize the yellowtail bycatch?
That was one reason, and also we just dealt with this 10% cap and 100% issue in Framework 45, and we affirmed it to 90%. So, I mean, this to me is like a repeat of what we are – that is repeated work. And if I may, I mean, if we don't do this, and I look down this list, I see nowhere of anything that's addressing our failure to achieve OI. And it'll be years. And Tom may be right. It may be a lot of work. But I also don't see a timeline on fleet diversity and accumulation caps. That amendment's going to take more than – we're not going to get that done by 2012 anyway. So we're not pushing that out. We're just saying that's going to go along. It's going to go along anyway. And it may it'll go past 2012 whether we do this or not. I'm just saying we cannot continue to keep pushing this down the road and not reach OI. It's not fair to the industry. It's not fair to the infrastructure. And if you want to preserve fleet diversity and infrastructure, the best way is to land your fish that you're allowed to land. You know, that helps everybody. Even if it says, some people say, well, it's only going to help big boats. It's going to help big boats or offshore boats or Georgia's boats by moving them out of the Gulf of Maine. You know, and we're under hard tax now. That was the whole argument of if we're going to go into hard tax, we're going to be able to get access to fish. You know, the whole argument back along was we had the blunt tool and we had to be cautious and all this. Okay, now we've done what we had to do. Let's move it along and get closer to OI. The fish are there. We need to get to them. Scallops are there. Higher CPUE helps the environment, helps the habitat, helps the yellowtail issue. I mean, I really feel strong that we need to move this issue because, again, you look down the list, that's going to be 5 years before we get to this.
Sally?
One question and then a comment on the motion. Karen added the other species to address the outstanding AMs. I assume that's what your intent was in the original motion. Okay. Now, you know, obviously there's a very small amount of number of vessels that are expected to remain in the common pool, but if there are common pool vessels, there needs to be the full complement of input controls to make sure that that fishery is operating the way it's expected. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, just eliminating this wholesale. And then the other thing is, it seems like there's been a general agreement that it's going to take some time to get this done, as Tom described. And the habitat amendment, once that gets done, I mean, I see you shaking your head, but once it gets done, this is agonizing how long this has taken. It was initiated in I think it was 2004. It was the first year I was on the council, and I'm almost term limiting off. So it's, you know, that's the place to get this done. It's the, that's, I wish the chair of the that committee were here today to talk about that, and so the, and so we could get some more of a commitment to get that measure done, because that's an omnibus amendment, which is what is needed to address some of the issues that this motion raises, as far as access to areas where both the scallop fleet and the groundfish fleet should potentially have access to. That's what, that's part of what that amendment, the habitat amendment, was all about. That's why it's an omnibus. So anyway, I'm going to oppose this motion and hope that the council will finally get the job done on the habitat amendment to address this and other issues. Thank you.
Mary Beth?
Well, to address the common pool issues, it's my understanding that they're going to be under hard tax as well. So, I mean, if your mortality is covered both with sectors and common pool, then I don't see that particular issue. And as to the habitat omnibus amendment, is about habitat. It's not about mortality closures. The omnibus amendment will address habitat closures and any restructures of those, restructuring of those closures based on habitat issues. This is totally different. This is mortality closures that preceded the habitat measures and were put in place for an entirely different reason. Even if you, the habitat amendment suggested changes to mortality closures, which it shouldn't, it only should, you know, suggest changes to habitat closures, you'd still need to go back and adjust the groundfish plan. So, I mean, that link to habitat, I just don't see the link. They're two different things.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually do see the link. I think that this should follow the habitat amendment because there is some overlap, and it's important first to establish where the habitat closure should be. So I think that one should come first. I also think that this would be a problem in the specifications. We need to have specifications in place by the start of the 2012 fishing year. I think this is huge, and I don't think that there's going to be enough time to do something as comprehensive as this and still get the specifications done in time for the start of the 2012 fishing year. And more importantly, these closures do provide additional protection for groundfish. And I understand that we're under hard tap now, but that's not the only type of protection that we have. And I think it's premature. We're not in we're talking about trying to achieve OY. Well, we've got far fewer stocks where we're trying to achieve OY than we do that we're trying to rebuild. And so I think it would be a mistake to start to look at measures that remove protections before we're further along in our rebuilding. The last time we looked at this at the mid-year point, we had still 13 stocks where we had issues. And I think we added a couple to that after the fact. So I think it's more appropriately considered at the end of the next set of specifications, which ends in 2014, which coincides also with the end of the rebuilding period for many of these stocks. So I oppose the motion. I think it's something that the council needs to have be a standalone amendment and look more broadly at all the implications.
Anyone who hasn't spoke on the motion to amend? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, the Habitat Committee is proposing to eliminate the Georges Bank closed areas. I mean, that's part of the discussion that's been ongoing for the last, six months. I support the concept of the motion. I'm just concerned about the timing and with these measures being coupled with specifications. I think it's the right motion, the wrong vehicle.
Anyone else who hasn't had a chance? Ready for the question on the motion to amend? David?
Yeah, the question was never really answered. Is this framework?
I think Tom said he believes it is, but the question really is whether it's an EIS or an EA. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Four in favor, opposed? 10 opposed. Abstentions? Motion fails, 4-10. Back on the main motion. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question and perhaps a motion. And I guess my question and concern is about the catch shares workshop. It's not for the value of the workshop, but more along the lines of whether or not it will conflict with our efforts to move forward Amendment 6 of Monkfish. As most everyone knows, we're proposing to do a very comprehensive bottoms-up approach with Monkfish that's going to include much of this discussion, and I'd hate to have the tail wagging the dog. So I need a little bit more clarity as to how we would host this catch air workshop and whether or not it may impact the progress on Amendment 6, because if it looks like it might slow things down, I'm going to make a motion to amend to remove this and put it below the line.
Terry, this is a concept we talked about at the executive committee meeting. I don't know that I can add any more to it than you already know. As far as timing goes, I don't think we've identified when in the calendar year we would even have this.
Yeah, okay, well then upon further reflection, I'm going to make a motion to remove the cat shares workshop below the line.
Is there a second? Dave Gaethel. Discussion on the motion to amend. Sally?
My recollection of the discussion at the executive committee was that there was an agreement that there was a need to ensure that both the design and process for any new cat share is thorough and as absolutely well understood as possible, and that any refinements to existing cat share programs are the same, as thorough and well understood as possible. And, I mean, the council has, ever since its inception, taken an adaptive and iterative approach to management, as it no doubt will in the future with existing cat share programs or new ones, as the resource changes, management changes, and as it does, the discussion that I recall is that it makes sense that everybody understands what a design protocol and a process is that everybody understands is important to follow, regardless of if it's a new system you're putting in place or a system that you're refining. So if this falls below the line, then it's not simply a matter of timing. It could always be a matter of timing, but I see this as being something that's going to allow the council to engage more effectively in development of these programs. And if we put it off, then we put off doing just that. So for those reasons, I'm going to oppose this motion. Thank you.
Terry.
When we discuss Monkfish on Thursday morning, the council will have the opportunity to review a very comprehensive public scoping document that's going to be available to New England and Mid-Atlantic public members, industry, and council altogether. While this is specific to Monkfish only, I think that the precedent's made. I am concerned of conflicting efforts, conflicting messages, and two different processes. We've got significant progress moving ahead with Monkfish, and I don't want to complicate it by having a second process. There's a lot of room to have follow-up workshops for the public. There are several organizations that have offered to help, and I think that the council will be better served by working with them and focusing on Monkfish rather than a holistic approach at this point.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just to follow on Sally's comments, it certainly seems to me that the sector managers have been working day to day with sectors, and they understand what the problems are and that they've encountered. And I would think that we could learn an awful lot from them to continue to improve the system that we have in place. So I would support keeping it above the line.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I note that the workload is to be shared by all the staff. But my question is that NOAA has now finalized and has published its catch-share policy. And that catch-share policy, for the most part, is an action plan that describes how NOAA will move forward with the catch-share management discussions with the council specifically. Money's to be made available, hopefully, for the promotion of catch-share management to help the council delve deeper into it and to deal with all the thorny issues that are associated with catch-share management. So with that policy out the door, if we were to approve this as an action, did the executive committee consider that this might not necessarily be a big staff job, but it would be a job that could be dealt with in a major way by all the resources that we expect to get from NOAA as a consequence of their NOAA catch-share policy? It seemed to me from the reading of the draft version and the final version that some major, not promises, but commitments are now being made. So if that's true, then, and those monies will be there to assist us and other councils, of course, maybe this would not be a difficult task for us to undertake. If it's solely on our shoulders, then maybe it would be, and I would tend to sympathize more with Terry's position. So that's my question. How does that NOAA catch-share policy and the commitments made by NOAA factor into the executive committee's thinking on having this above the line?
Well, I can't speak to resources because I can't commit resources that aren't mine to commit, but as far as framing up the discussion, certainly the bounds of the discussion would be greatly influenced by the catch-share policy that's now final, with a specific focus on community aspects, community fishery associations, and other terms that are in Magnuson and yet further defined in the catch-share policy would be a principal focus of the workshop. But I can't tell you if they're going to bring money to the table to or staff to support it. Mary Beth?
In general, I support the motion. I think that we have spent a bit of time on catch shares. There is the national policy. There's a ton of literature out there. There's also lots of guidelines that have been written by different organizations. I think the Monkfish Committee needs to consider all that as they move forward. And to Rip's comments about the sector managers and the lessons they are learning, under Groundfish number four, lessons learned with first year of sector operations, I believe that's already covered, and I think it is an important discussion. But as far as it being a priority and the staff spending time on this particular issue, I just don't see it as being important right at the moment. So I support the motion.
Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, I oppose the motion. The way that I've been looking at this is as it's characterized here in the priorities, which is we're going to be 1 year into this program, and it's really important that we look at what worked and what didn't work, and how we make improvements. And we've been having regular workshops with the sectors and the sector managers, but I think it's time for the council to be involved in those discussions because our discussions have been on sort of the implementation part of it. So I think it's really important that that this be a council-driven sort of look at how it worked and how it didn't work. Having said that, we want to be very involved. I can't speak for the funding part of it. We don't have a budget and may never have one given what's happened in Congress. for next year. There may be some funding available, but again, I think we need to be clear about what the goal of the workshops are, and I don't think it was intended, or I didn't understand it as sort of a general discussion of catch shares and the catch share policy so much as in groundfish and in sectors. We've implemented this program, and it's important to look at it's a major, major change, and it's important to look at what's working and what's not working.
Mary Beth.
Well, I don't disagree with what Pat just said. I think there is a need to have a review of what we've done and where we're going. I didn't get that out of the description that's here on the paper, however. So maybe there's just some, I mean, what's here, what's described here is not what you just said, Pat. Well, that's number four in the groundfish.
Mr. Libby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I see number four under groundfish, and it was mentioned that that was for committee, and then we've got the catch shares workshop. It seems like the same thing. I don't necessarily support the motion to eliminate this. I'd just like to know why we're doing it just for committees up here and then for the full council down here. Maybe we could just do it once. Thank you.
Okay, so underground fish number four is an opportunity to look backwards over the performance of the sectors at the committee level on groundfish only. So groundfish sector managers and other participants would have an opportunity at a committee workshop, groundfish committee, to discuss administrative issues or management issues relative to groundfish only at the committee. The workshop at the bottom is a broader, more comprehensive look at a different side of catchers, focusing more primarily more on community impacts, community benefits, as defined or further defined now by the catch share policy, the national catch share policy. It was an opportunity that the executive committee thought they could bring forward to the council. And, you know, we don't have anything further than that at this point. I mean, it's a concept. David Gaethel.
I support number four under groundfish because I think that is a useful lesson. I think there's a lot there we could learn and get a report to the council. It's relatively straightforward. This last one, the reason I seconded the motion is different from Terry's, and the reason for me is that despite the national push to instill catch shares in all fisheries, this is a situation where the council could be seen as politically tone-deaf if not handled very carefully. There's a lot of opposition to catch shares in a lot of other fisheries, especially in a recreational fishery, and if we do basically something similar to what we did at Bretton Woods, where we retreat 100 miles from the ocean and hold a meeting with relatively limited public access to have a discussion on catch shares, the public's going to be wild. They were wild the last time. So in order to do this, you're going to have to hold it, in my way of thinking anyway, probably in a major port with full public access, invite all the fisheries to attend, because you're talking about all the fisheries, and take extensive public comment. I don't see this as a one-day type thing. This could be a week. To get all that comment out there and have a real, real careful discussion. And then maybe you could frame some policy considerations out of that. But if you don't do it that way, if you do it as some kind of something that more or less excludes public participation or greatly limits it, we'll be seen as Bretton Woods, too. We'll join the likes of Marie Antoinette, Nero, and a few other people in history who have been seen as being totally politically tone-deaf. I don't really want to do that. I want to make sure if this is done, it's done right. And if it's done right, it's going to take a lot of staff time, a lot of money, and it's going to take a big place to meet. So I don't see this as a simple exercise. And I think it's going to take, as I said, I think it would take a lot of staff time to do it right. And I don't think we have that much staff time. We got an awful lot of stuff here that really does absolutely have to be done. If people want to hold this, I see this as perhaps a private function similar to Bretton Woods, where people who, you know, want to pay for this stuff can ante up the money and invite people to attend.
Anything further before I call the question? Doug Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to oppose this motion basically because after our first catch share workshop that we had, I heard remarks from many of the people on this council saying, boy, I wish we'd had this before we started going down our first road of catch share management with groundfish. I think this is an appropriate time as we get ready to move down round two with monkfish, and I think it's very appropriate fishery for us to be looking at it. I think having this go in concert with the development of the plan would be valuable in providing a background for us in looking at how to develop the next catch share plan with the input from the industries.
Pat Kirkland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for my confusion earlier and for confusing the council further. I'm opposed to the motion as well, and there is not a national effort to push catch shares in every fishery, and if you read the catch shares policy, I think that's very clear, and so to me that illustrates one of the reasons why this workshop is a good idea. I think that there is a lot of misinformation out there, and so that the more information that the council and the industry has, the more likely they are to make good and informed decisions about whether or not catch shares are appropriate in a fishery or not. And so I think this is worth the council's effort.
Anyone else that hasn't spoken? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Four. Opposed? Nine. Abstentions? Motion fails, 4-9. Back on the main motion. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm in a bit of an awkward situation in that I would like the council to address the haddock bycatch cap for May 1, 2011 implementation, and that would have to be done through an emergency action. However, if I make a motion regarding an emergency action, that will stimulate debate about whether or not the action should be taken as opposed to just making it a priority issue to be discussed for 2012. I'm thinking about making the change. In other words, the motion right now has, for groundfish, framework 46. And at first I considered putting into framework 46 something that would relate to the haddock bycatch cap. But that would mean it would not be implemented until 2012. And in light of what was said by, you know, David Ellington when he got to the microphone to talk about herring under the public comment period, you know, in light of the ASMFC request, in light of the very detailed letter from the Sustainable Fishery Coalition regarding the need for emergency action 2011, it would be inappropriate for me to suggest that as a priority in the framework we add the haddock bycatch cap because it's too late. So I guess I'm looking for guidance from you, Mr. Chairman. I could make a motion to add something for Framework 46 that would deal with the haddock bycatch cap, but and then at some other time, appropriate on the agenda, maybe even on the business, I would make a motion specific to emergency action on the haddock bycatch cap. And that would then stimulate discussion on whether or not we should move it forward on an emergency basis. So I know I caught you off guard, Mr. Chairman, on this one, but again, I'm looking for some guidance as to how we should proceed so I don't complicate matters for you as the chair.
Yeah, I'm not caught off guard, David. I think we should have the discussion all at once. Emergency, regulatory action. Let's have the discussion.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, I'll go in that direction. The reason why I feel and others feel there's a compelling need to move forward with an emergency action on the haddock bycatch cap is that when the cap was established by this council a few years ago, implemented I think in 2006, there was an understanding that we would have less than 20% observer coverage of the herring fleet in the Georges Bank area in particular. As a consequence of that low level of observer coverage, the cap was set at 0.2% of the haddock TAC. Relatively low number, not what it is right now. I think it was a little higher than the 186,000 that's in place right now. That was the logic at the time. Well, years have gone by. We now have increased observer coverage, and certainly in closed area one, we have 100% observer coverage. Not 100% observer coverage outside of area one and area three, where the fishery is operating and catching the haddock, but nevertheless, increased observer coverage. So it seems to me that in light of the compelling arguments made by the industry for an increase in the haddock bycatch cap, to afford them the opportunity to take the Georges Bank quota for sea herring, and indeed there's going to be a major shortfall, in light of the concern that the mackerel fishery may not be able to operate on Georges Bank this coming year, I guess regardless of whether it's an emergency action or not, that's still going to be the problem. If the haddock bycatch cap is taken, then the mackerel fishery won't be able to work in the Georges Bank area to the detriment of that part of the pelagic fleet. Well, anyways, I'll set that one aside for a second. In light of the fact that the haddock bycatch cap appears to be forcing vessels to stay off of Georges Bank and to be more interested in Area 1A and fishing inshore, where we really don't want them fishing, at least that's my opinion, I feel there are very compelling arguments to move forward on an emergency basis to increase the haddock bycatch cap. However, I'm not stupid. I know that this is a very controversial issue, obviously. We've talked about this before. The emails are flowing. You know, the websites are burning. Action alerts have been issued regarding the council even considering an increase in the bycatch cap for haddock. So I understand the controversial nature of this. And that's why my motion will be sensitive to, I believe, all the concerns expressed about even considering the increased cap for haddock. And also it will be sensitive to the desire of this council and those paying attention to the herring fleet for increased observer coverage. And who pays for that coverage? So, with all that said, I gave the motion to Karen. Okay, I would make a motion to amend the motion, the main motion, to add a number five, which would be to request an emergency action to increase the size of the haddock bycatch cap for the sea herring fishery and modify the area to which the cap applies. It should be with consideration of 100% observer coverage in that area and industry funding for that coverage tied to the cap increase. So I think that gets to a lot of important issues that this council is concerned about and addresses the industry concern, recognizing that the industry will not be too keen and will likely oppose 100% observer coverage, industry funded. Nevertheless, increase the cap comes at a cost, I suggest. So that is the motion, Mr. Chairman, for an addition to a groundfish action, an additional groundfish action, number five.
So the wording's correct before I ask for a second?
That's correct.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion? Pat Kirkle.
Process question first, Mr. Chair. This is a motion to amend the priorities. So I'm a little confused by that because, of course, an emergency action wouldn't be a council priority. And since an emergency action at the most can be only effective for 1 year, there would, in fact, have to be a council action to implement this change permanently. So what's the vehicle for that?
Good questions. David?
Well, that's why I said it was a bit of an awkward situation because whatever action is taken, if it's an emergency action, clearly there'll be a great deal of staff input and involvement in the emergency action, I would think, working with the regional office. So my suggestion would be that if indeed this motion were to pass, there would be another motion made by me that would actually then amend number one, prepare Framework 46, and add something like this into Framework 46 with an understanding that it would be in place for 2012. Not preferable, but there's no way to get this in place prior to 2011 unless we do it by an emergency basis. So I realize it is a one-year thing, but 1 year is certainly a good start. If indeed it will relate to and address the concerns of those individuals who signed that letter, if it's in our binder, the Sustainable Fisheries Coalition, where they make it very clear that their industry is at risk. And I'm taking that concern, that economic concern of theirs, to heart. So that's why I'm suggesting that, well, I made my point.
So in follow-up, it certainly seems to me that the council should first agree that this is an appropriate action before you request an emergency to implement it sooner than the council would implement it. So I think that the order of these should be reversed. And then I had a question on the timing, since a secretarial action is only good for up to 365 days, is this a request for something to be effective starting May 1, 2011?
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I've got a couple of comments, I think. One, Dave made a comment that this would, if we asked for the emergency action, it would take a lot of the council staff time. I think once we ask for the action, it goes to the service and the council staff is out of it. We don't have a lot of input from that point on and what takes it. And if I'm wrong, you know, and I also see this as one of the things about an emergency action is for something that's unforeseen. If we put it in here, that means we're discussing it now to take action on it later. That it's not unforeseen. That means we had the time to discuss it, and we chose not to take action on it. Or we couldn't do it. There's just something wrong with putting it under the priority discussion. Whether it's a right or wrong thing to do, I just see it here. If we're discussing it now to say we're going to start something to ask for an emergency action, that was the time you needed. So it just does seem in the right place.
And as Dr. Pierce stated, his first words out of his mouth that were, I'm in an awkward position or situation. And I think what you're really saying is, not only do you want to, you're seeking an emergency action from the council, you're also being cognizant of the fact that an emergency action, if granted, only lasts a certain amount of time. You want to, during this priority discussion, also pave the way for this discussion in a regulatory action. So that's really what you're trying to do here. Dr. Pierce.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, which is why I asked for good guidance and you're giving it to me. Perhaps the best way to accomplish this would be to, instead of having it as an added number five, it could be to modify Framework 46 to include this particular language. And then after we, perhaps, depending upon the will of the council, after we include it as a priority item for 2011, we would then, at the appropriate time, or I would at the appropriate time, request the emergency action. If that makes it easier for the process, you know, then I would be willing to, with the maker of the motion agreeing, and make that friendly change.
Mr. Allen.
I think to look at this as a practicality of the fisheries, if we ask for an emergency action, you know, I don't know, it probably takes a month or two, I'm not sure, but this season will be over in herring by the time it goes in effect, which is fine. Then it would get you through the 2011 fishing season. It would expire, let's just use December for instance. For all practical matters, the fishing on George's Bank is over by that time. So you would have a gap before
46 went in effect, that we'd fall back to the old caps. But there's really no fishing on Georgia's during that period. So from my understanding of the fisheries and the practical nature of it, of the matter, I don't think that this would be an inappropriate approach. No, assuming we get the framework 46 in place by May of 2012, I think we, by doing it that way, we still will have helped the fisheries dramatically. Right.
That makes sense.
So I think we're okay.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, I have some concerns about that because if, let's say, the emergency action were to move forward and be implemented in January 1 or February 1, it would take you through the following year. And then the following year, the default is a significant decrease in the available haddock to the fishery. And one would assume that if you increase it, that when you hit that date, then you will have exceeded what would the default would have been. So that would mean Area 3 would and Area 1 would be closed in the spring as the fish migrate. It would be, you know, so I don't think that's truly a good solution. My preference truly would be to go with the groundfish fishing year, implemented emergency action as of May 1. We have a small amount of haddock still available. It's very small, but we're not going to be fishing on the northern edge. We are going to be fishing as fish migrate, and we could use that small amount. But to have it implemented in February when, you know, you don't need a lot, and then the following year have you know, Area 3 be totally closed, I don't think that's a good alternative. But, and I'm little, at the moment, not really sure what we're debating, if we're debating the framework or the emergency action. I'm getting a little confused where we're at.
Dr. Pierce had made the suggestion that this would be an amendment to the priorities. Number one, underground fish, framework 46. And we'd have that debate in the context of priorities. And then he would bring up the issue of a request for an emergency action, and the council would debate that. He was looking for Jim Oslin, who was the seconder, to accept that as a friendly. So assuming Jim accepts that as an amendment to Framework 46 under priorities, that's what we're debating now.
Okay. I have one question, though, and Pat stepped out. Can you ask for an emergency action 6 months ahead of time? I mean, don't you lose the nature of the emergency? I'm just a little concerned about that. But for the purpose of the debate here, I approve the adjustment that Dr. Pierce suggests.
Okay, before we get to your specific question, if there's no objection, the maker and seconder have agreed that this motion applies to an adjustment or an amendment to our priority setting, Framework 46. So this is an amendment to item number one, Framework 46, under priorities. That's what we're debating right now. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, so the motion on the screen. That needs to be, okay, she's modifying it now. To remove to request an emergency action, so it would be to modify Framework 46 to include an increase in the size, or to increase, modify Framework 46, item number one, to increase, get rid of and, include, get rid of and, to include, yeah, to increase, good grief, okay, to increase the size of the haddock by catch cap and modify the area to which it applies. That's it, okay. Thank you.
Okay, is everybody clear on what we're debating at the moment? We're not debating an emergency action request. We're debating modifying Framework 46 in the groundfish plan. Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, David, does this motion, from your perspective, consider the decoupling of Georges and Gulf of Maine?
Yes, that's modify the area to which it applies. That will stimulate debate upon whether or not it makes sense for us to close down all the Gulf of Maine when the haddock cap is taken principally on Georges Bank.
Tom Neese.
I
Maybe the council should consider, since this is going into priorities and it's a framework, and a framework is supposed to consider a range of alternatives, why don't you say for framework 46 to, but framework 46 to address the haddock bycatch cap, rather than spell out the specifics about modifying the area, modifying the cap, 100% observer coverage, changing the area, and then, you know, the herring, I'm not sure if the herring and the groundfish committee can work together to develop the alternatives that will go in there, rather than to specify a specific alternative here, which, you know, a strict reading would say this precludes things like separating Gulf of Maine and George's Bank, perhaps, unless you, and it might preclude some other type of funding proposal. So, you know, rather than be so specific with the measures you want to consider, say address the problems caused by the heading bycatch cap or something like that in framework 46. And then if you want specifics, put them in the emergency action language that you talk about there, which you want NIMS to consider.
Pat?
I understand that we're talking about framework 46 now, but I think it's still important to talk about the timing issues and Jim's question. That's, in fact, what Gene and I were discussing. Because there is, I mean, the council needs to be able to reasonably argue that you couldn't take the action yourself. So it's too late to put it in framework 45 because you're taking final action on framework 45. But it's probably not too late for the council to take an action to have it in place before it's an issue in 2011. Because the problem of the haddock herring bycatch the overlap is until later in the fishing year. So it doesn't really have to be in place by May 1st. So I do think you need to talk about the timing.
Doug Graham?
Just want to ask the maker of the motions to help clarify for me the need for the increase in, potential increase in the paddock bycatch catch. Is it because at the time that we put in that bycatch cap, the level was set at, 0.2%, because what we were counting was only going to be haddock caught on observed trips. It wasn't something that was expanded up to the total number of trips. And that at that time, what was the observer coverage? Was it 5%, 20%, and I'm hearing that what you're saying was it was lower and that it has increased the amount of observer coverage, so there's more opportunity for haddock bycatch to be observed now than it was when this measure was put in. Is that correct?
It is correct, but I take it a bit further in that it has 100% observer coverage. So we don't deal with less than 20% observer coverage or less than 50% observer coverage. It is in exchange for an increase in the haddock bycatch cap, which is a controversial bycatch cap, and we go with this particular strategy, the 100% observer coverage, and, of course, funding is always the issue, and this would say industry funded, recognizing the industry won't find that very palatable.
I think one of the things that is somewhat difficult in this discussion, aside from the whether to go for an emergency or to amend or change our priorities, is that we're not necessarily having a conversation with the facts, background on this fishery and the discussion and the decisions in 43, and as we've moved forward, what the relative performance has been. The record, my read of the record is that the 0.2% was set based on an assumption of roughly 20% observer coverage, in that it was only haddock that was observed. There was no extrapolation in the fishery relative to the haddock. and that the facts are that we've had between roughly 20% to 30% coverage this year in this fishery. So we have had slightly higher observer coverage across the fishery, which is where the cap came from. The cap was across the range of the stock. Not, I know we've had 100% in certain areas that have targeted this, but the cap wasn't set on a specific sub-area. The cap was set on the range of the haddock stock and the haddock and the herring fishery. And the observer coverage rates haven't been 100% in the fishery. The observer coverage rates have been 20 to 30% across the fishery, the range of the fishery. So, and I bring that up only to illustrate that I think there's some good elements in this motion which talk about funding, raising the coverage, and also the management area that's impacted by triggering the cap. I think those are all important things that this council needs to look at. However, I don't think we're in a position right now. We don't have the data in front of us to make value judgments on that. We certainly have some compelling information from the industry. Both I saw it at the Atlantic States. I know that we've had discussions at the committee level. This council has also had, I guess, some warnings about this becoming an issue. Even the regional administrator brought it up at the last council meeting as an issue on the horizon relative to having to close the herring, directed herring fishery because we were approaching the cap. So we've been hearing about this, and certainly there is a concern. We made a policy decision in 43 to set a cap, and we're approaching it. And, you know, now we're having a debate about whether or not the accountability measure was appropriate, and I think that's a healthy thing to do as managers. So we really have two questions. Do we have an emergency, and how do we frame that emergency, and what are we asking for? And then number two, are we going to reprioritize our work moving forward this year to address this issue? And I think we also need to get some input from staff, programmatic staff, as to what type of work is required to make some of these changes that are being contemplated. Remember, we have Amendment 5 in the herring fishery, which is going to contain a tremendous amount of analysis to put a monitoring system on the water. If we go through this process, what draw for that PDT work can we expect? And also, how much work will it require for our groundfish PDT? So there's a lot of questions we really need answers to before we can make a responsible decision. Anyone else in the council? Sally.
Yeah, one other thing that hasn't been discussed and that's come up recently in the herring committee is the hotspot project that is in the initial stages with SMAS to avoid river herring. And I know that there was discussion when the interaction with the 2003 year class of haddock first popped up to do a similar kind of thing. So, you know, there are two sides of this equation, providing more of, you know, an increase in the bycatch cap and bycatch avoidance. So I'm wondering if, I just don't know what the status is or was of any efforts to reduce haddock bycatch that were underway many years ago. Maybe there's work that's actually has been going on, and I'm just not aware of it. But I'm just reminded of that because that's certainly something that's been under consideration in the context of avoiding river herring bycatch, and it was something that was talked about with respect to haddock. So how does that play into this as well?
Anyone else? Jimmy?
Yeah, in listening to Pat's comments, it would seem to me that what we would want to do is initiate, if we want to prioritize this, is it would have to be a not framework 46, but a separate framework with the goal of implementing it sometime in the 2011 fishing year and separate it from framework 46. I'm just trying to read through this in my mind, and that you wouldn't have an emergency action. You would have framework with the goal of implementation.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow on Sally's comments, there was a whole section in Amendment 1 to the Herring Plan that discussed these industry initiatives, and the two objectives were to develop a program that will assist the herring industry in minimizing haddock bycatch to the extent practicable, and to utilize vessel information on a tow-by-tow basis to identify bycatch hotspots and compile data, et cetera. I, too, would like to know, what sort of follow-through there has been on this. I mean, I think that industry initiatives are where they work are the way to go. And if this isn't working, it makes me skeptical about what happens, too, with the river herring hotspots. So I do agree with the chair. I mean, I think we need, some more information here. We're making some decisions with knowing that we don't have information.
Mary Beth?
Just to follow up on that, the industry has funding to do the work with SMAST for river herring this winter and have submitted a letter of interest to have some funding to follow up with haddock next year. So we have the funding that's set for the river herring and pending on the haddock, so we'll have to see. Hopefully we'll have that money and continue that work. The one thing about it is that the bycatch is extremely variable. I work with four boats working George's Bank, pair trawling, side by side. One vessel got 25,000 metric ton, in the other pair, side by side, caught 600 pounds. So there is a huge amount of variability, and perhaps that tow by tow information will give us something to go on. I mean, certainly the industry has worked on gear modifications in the past and had some good results with that, and that work is continuing, looking at grids and putting cameras down. Some industry people have purchased their own cameras to do that work themselves, and hopefully that will, produce some results. It is our understanding that in overseas that similar type modification has worked in some other fisheries. So we'll continue to work on that. It's a reference to the observer coverage level. As the letter from the regional administrator indicated at our last council meeting that we received, the majority of this bycatch is, it's on George's Bank. I mean, there might be an incidental haddock caught in the Gulf of Maine, but it is, incidental amounts. Where we run into the issue is on George's. So if you decouple the Gulf of Maine from George's, which this motion suggests that we should consider that, the observer coverage level by default, because of the closed area one rules, has been at almost 100%. Of the vessels that I work for, there was one trip in early June which they did not have observers on board, and since that time, 100%. So the consideration of the amount of haddock was, with a target, as John indicated, he is correct, and the circumstances today due to the closed area one rules are quite different. And the other thing I think people should consider is, haddock are dying in the water, the groundfish fishery, and we should be doing whatever we can to allow them increased access to those fish. But the reality is they're not taking the fish. And even with sectors, keep our fingers crossed, it will improve quite a bit. It can improve, it can double, triple, and still they're not going to take it. So, I mean, there's a lot of fish out there, and this is an extremely limiting factor for the herring fishery. We've reduced the inshore quotas dramatically, pushed the fish offshore, told people that's where we want you to go, and then you have a haddock cap that's, the pounds. I mean, it's at 100. We're having difficulty dealing with this year. Had to voluntarily leave the area so we wouldn't close the Gulf of Maine. So we did that. We got 4 days fishing in the Gulf of Maine, and the agency closed because they were concerned about the activity level being so high. So you just can't win for losing going in either direction. And with the framework discussion we're going to have for groundfish later this week, the amount of the cap is going to be dramatically decreasing. I mean, we're at like 168,000 pounds for 2010, and by 2012, we'll go to 108. So, I mean, this is a very, very limited fishery for herring. We have a lot of people, who are dependent upon this fish moving into the marketplace. Almost all the bait in New England that came from the herring industry came from Georgia's Bank this summer. Catch rates in the Gulf of Maine were very, very slow. It's an extremely important issue, and I'm not sure, you know, what the best approach is. It seemed to me straightforward was emergency action for May of 2011. If we were to initiate a separate action for Framework 46, I don't know what the chances are of actually, I mean, I don't know if we have the staff to do it or, you know, when the implementation of that would be. So I guess the thing that I know is that we need to do something. And, I mean, I think this motion would work, but then Pat suggested another alternative, which I'm not sure. I guess feedback from staff might be helpful on that.
David Gaethel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a motion to substitute. Move to substitute to create, I guess it would be framework, was it actually 47? It would be a separate framework. So could you say 47 to address issues associated with the haddock bycatch cap and the sea herring fishery?
It's a motion to substitute. Is there a second? Is there a second on the motion to substitute? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion on the motion to substitute.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
David.
The reason I made the motion to substitute is that I think Dave Pierce's idea is a good idea, but I do think that there are more ideas out there, and I think we need to have a full exploration of those ideas. As Tom said, that you know we might be limited with the original motion to just exploring that one idea. For example, I would suggest there are things that could be done like individual vessel bycatch caps and then shut down individual vessels instead of shutting down the whole fleet. I do think the area should be decoupled. I'm not sure I'm in favor of increasing the cap, but I think those areas need to be addressed in a framework. We've identified the issue, and I think we should let the process proceed after that to get the best solution.
I had Frank.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I kind of like the first motion because I like the things that were in there, but I also agree that this might be more appropriate. It's too bad we don't have integration of our plans because it would be nice if the herring fleet could just buy them from the sector boats, the haddock, and that would solve a lot of problems. But one of my questions here is probably for Gene. I know this wouldn't be an allocation, but if you increase the cap, the haddock has to come from someplace. And seeing how we've already allocated them to the sectors and we have some from the common pool, if you increase this cap on the haddock, where do they come from? Can that be done in a framework or is that an amendment?
Well, I don't know. How is it considered now? Is it deducted from the overall ACL?
Tom, I think Tom Neese can give us a little clarity here.
I think the quick answer is I think it can be done in a framework because it is one of the subcomponents of the ACL, and in Amendment 16 we specified that this is one of the subcomponents that was specifically identified in Amendment 16, and Amendment 16 says that those values can be adjusted through a framework or specification process. So it was contemplated in the amendment anyway that this sort of thing could be changed in a framework. By this sort of thing, I mean the size of the cap.
So that was the first part of Frank's question was framework or amendment. I think the second part was where do the fish come from?
Well, this isn't quite accurate, but basically they come off the top before you just start dividing it up to the ground between the groundfish boats.
No, I mean, I think if the concept that you can adjust these sort of subcomponent that are more caps rather than allocation is already in the amendment, then I think you could probably do it by framework along the lines of a rationale that Tom was offering.
Okay, Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was about ready to make a similar motion. Basically because the original motion had very specific measures, and I think we need to I agree that those measures should be considered, but I think we need to take a bigger, broader approach to it. And the only other thing that I was hoping would be in the motion would be also an explicit consideration of not only the catch cap, but the area that the catch cap applies to. And I was wondering if the mover and the maker of the motion and the seconder would agree to a friendly amendment.
Hey, Doug, sorry. My read on it is it's wide open.
Yeah.
Issues associated with the catch cap, and that the area would be one of them.
So okay. If there is
a, I'm just trying not to get six layers deep in the motion-making, too.
As long as the council's aware, feels that way, and that the ideas that were brought up by Dave would also be considered in this framework.
Right, but not limited just to those ideas.
Right.
Okay. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, to the maker, is your intent that this would progress concurrently with 46 to be implemented by May 1 of 2012?
Yeah, but it would be a standalone framework. That whether it had a separate committee or the same committee dealt with it is probably up to the executive committee.
Lori?
Well, my question was somewhat related, and that is, I think it would be helpful if the motion included some sort of time component, because if this is passed as a separate framework, it for the priority list for next year, it would be helpful to know if the intent is to try to fast-track this framework and have something implemented for the 2011-2012 quota, which starts on May 1st, recognizing that the encounters with the fishery are more of a summer-fall kind of deal. But a framework can happen over two council meetings. It could potentially be January and April or something like that. So knowing what type of time frame and how much of a priority this framework would be helpful in terms of thinking about the overall priorities, because I'll come back at some point and we can talk about the work issues associated with this, because there are a lot of relationships to not only the groundfish actions that are being developed next year, but also the herring amendment.
Jimmy.
Yeah, I just heard somebody mention implementation in 2012. I think the intention is to implement sometime in 2011. Okay,
So the intent is ASAP?
Yeah. I mean,
that's the intent, David?
I was leaving it up to the executive committee because I didn't think it was my prerogative to say. But, yeah, I mean, if we could get this done before, it's an issue for 2011. Terrific.
I mean, I appreciate your confidence in the executive committee, but I would rather have the council have a discussion about timing, because you got a lot of competing demands on our technical staff at the groundfish side and on the herring side. So having clarity as to when the council expects this to be back in front of them for a final vote, I think, is something we have to walk out of here with today. Mary Beth?
And I agree with those statements, because I think we need to be very realistic about what we're trying to achieve. And as Lori indicated, we would need to have something come back before the council in January and then again in April for it to be effective for the fishery for next year. So, I mean, is that doable or not? I mean, I question whether that's doable, and which would bring us back to having the measure stay in Framework 46 and doing an emergency action. I mean, the fishery this past year out there started in June. I just don't know if we can get it done. I think Pat makes a good point. You know, you look at the number of months between now and then. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. Is it practical? Are we actually really going to be able to do it? I question that. So I think that's the decision we should try to make now. I mean, if we look at the time frame and say, you know what, that's not happening, then you know, we should stick with keeping it in Framework 46. There's no sense in running two parallel frameworks, and ask for the emergency action. If the staff really thinks they can get it done and submit it by, you know, April, then let's do it. But I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen.
I don't think the staff could honestly answer the question without knowing what exactly is being contemplated.
It's up to the
you know, that's up to the council and the committee to either narrowly define, we want this by this day, and then the staff could say, I think we can deliver that. But having an open-ended reconsider, readdress, rehash, you know, which is, you want that flexibility going into the design, but it's not going to deliver a final product as quickly, perhaps. Dave Gaethel.
Well, two things. One is I'd like to keep the discussion of the emergency action separate, if at all possible. I know it's difficult, but my feelings on that are very different than my feelings on a framework. And I also think if it would make people happy, if the seconder of the motion would agree, I'd say for implementation in 2011 be added to the motion. And Terry's nodding his head in assent. The reason for this is then everybody would have a very clear idea of where we want to be and when we want to be there. And I find that people are much more willing to get the work done when somebody's holding a blowtorch to their feet than when somebody's holding a match to their little toe. You know, I just soon use the blowtorch approach.
Anyone else on this topic? Any objection to adding that line about implementation in 2011? Without objection. Anything further? You ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. No. Abstentions? Motion to substitute carries 14-0. Now we're on the main motion as substituted. Anything further on the main motion as substituted? This is to amend the priorities. Put it into the priorities. Anything further? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Now we're on the main motion, which is the priority slate as amended. Anything further? Dave Gaethel.
Just going to kind of re-ask my original question on Whiting. Is whoever is the chair of the Whiting committee, Whiting Skate Committee, going to be given any flexibility in how to address AMs in Whiting?
Well, if you look at the Whiting number one there, it just says prepare amendments to set ACLs, AMs, and spec packages. And it notes that there's a Whiting data poor workshop in 2010. I think where you're getting hung up, Dave, is the issues below the line were prepare amendment for limited entry. So we're not forwarding that we're going to prepare an amendment for limited entry. We're forwarding that we're going to prepare an amendment to set ACLs and AMs and spec packages. But we don't say you can't do limited entry. So my read on it, and unless the council objects, is it's something you can consider. Mary Beth?
I guess first I just had a quick question under scallops. Framework 43 is a new framework that will be considered in 2011. We're doing framework 22. Have I got my numbers right? So framework 23 is a new framework. Okay. I just did want to note that we did receive some correspondence relative to scallop priorities from Jeff Pike on behalf of a number of companies and almost 160 vessels. And I realize that, you know, we spent a lot of time on the issue of stacking and leasing in Amendment 15 and did not recommend that we move anything forward in that action. Since that time, there's been a lot of discussion in the industry about attempting to try a pilot program so that that information can come back to the council and we can make a more informed decision in the future about whether leasing would be an appropriate method. And it does concern me that in Amendment 15 that we did not meet the goal to address overcapacity in that fishery in any way. We're going to be looking at specifications for the next 2 years that will reduce open dates at sea for the fishery, and the vessels would be tied to the dock for even longer. So, I mean, I think we recognize there's an issue. We just really haven't come up with a means to address it. So I would like for some consideration of an action in the future, whether it be in this framework or another, to look at a pilot leasing program for the scallop fishery. And I do note that it is not above the line, and it's not below the line either, so it's in neither place. So I would make a motion to include under scallop priorities in framework 23 the development and implementation by framework a pilot leasing program that would provide the information necessary for the PDT and council to evaluate the effects of leasing in the fishery.
I believe that would need to be an amendment.
Perhaps Gene could speak to that.
I may be wrong. Am I right, Gene? Gene says amendment.
Given that advice, I guess I would amend the motion to say that in the next amendment, the next call of the amendment, that this be itemized as a priority.
Okay, so we're not, before I ask for a second, we're not proposing an amendment for this year in priorities right now. And I guess my question is, are you suggesting that we start an amendment this year, or?
Well, that's a particularly good question. I don't really know. I know that we've moved some staff around. For scallops, I don't know from the staff's perspective in preparing Framework 23 how encompassing that might be for them or what their timeline might be. I would say that we, you know, initiate an amendment as time allows upon the completion of Framework 23.
So then your motion, based on those comments, your motion would be to initiate an amendment upon completion of Framework 23?
That's correct.
To take up the issue of a scallop pilot leasing program?
Yes.
That's your motion. Is there a second to that motion? Jim Odlin? Seconds. Discussion. Jimmy?
Yeah, if we don't do this, when will we address capacity, efficiency, or safety in the scallop plan?
Anyone else? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I don't support this. As chair of the scallop committee, I don't care to revisit this issue. For a number of very good reasons. I mean, the record is quite complete already regarding pros and cons on days at sea leasing, and the pilot program, frankly, isn't that far afield from a full-blown allowance of days at sea leasing. If we're going to deal with the scallop fishery in an amendment form, I would suggest that we should do so in a different way, and that would be through ITQ management. Catch share management applied to the sea scallop fishery. Catch share management workshop would deal with that. The NOAA catch share policy highlights the need to profile certain species, certain fisheries that might qualify for that. So if we're going to get back into this issue of allocation and shifting of days at sea, fishing opportunities between fishermen, I would much rather do so in a much grander context as opposed to revisiting this issue, which will involve all the acrimony and the same comments that we've gone through during the course of our previous scallop action. So I just strongly oppose this.
But that's not a motion to amend. You're not amending ITQs for the pilot program. Oh, okay. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I oppose the motion as well. I think the time to take this up would be if the fishery changes somehow appreciably from what it is now. We just dealt with this last month in last council meeting in excruciating detail. I think that, if the fishery should change, if it moves into an overfished condition or overfishing's occurring and we have to take radical action in the fishery, then I could see having that discussion as part of that action. But nothing's changed from the last meeting that I'm aware of. And as such, this is just, to me, an attempt to bring up something and deal with, start over again on something that we already decided. So I oppose the motion.
Any council members wishing to speak in favor of the motion to amend that haven't spoken? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would simply comment that it does appear that support for leasing in the context of a pilot program has gained considerable support since the last meeting. One of the stated concerns that there seemed to be consensus around with the both public comments and comments that members raised with respect to concerns about the implications of a leasing program were the fact that there might be impacts in excess of what the PDT projected. And it was the uncertainty around those impacts that I think gave people cause for concern. And so the committee had tried to address that by suggesting that that there would be, in fact, a reevaluation of the fishing power factors and conversion factors basically during any framework cycle. But if this were put into a pilot program, then the council would have to evaluate those impacts before extending the program. And that's a much more rigid measure, I think, of review and accountability associated with impacts. So I would look at this a little bit differently than what was originally proposed. I think a lot of the work has already been done in terms of laying groundwork for considering the EIS. And so a lot of that's in place. I appreciate Dr. Pierce's concern about wanting to address capacity in a broader sense, and I don't disagree with the notion that other options could be considered. But I do question if the same interests that were opposed to leasing would somehow now be in support of an ITQ. That doesn't strike me as a likely reality, given the landscape of the industry right now. But I think there has been a significant increase in support for this type of approach, and I think that it would be good to consider that and address that. Thank you.
Anyone on the council wishing to speak against the motion? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is really neither for nor against, although I am inclined to agree with Dr. Pierce's comments about consideration of an overall IFQ program. But my questions are that of staffing and timetable. We've just allocated a bucket load of work to Groundfish. We're reassigning one staff to Groundfish. And realistically, what can we expect in what timetable if this was to move ahead?
Well, then we haven't finalized our priorities yet, and I plan on going to the audience before we take that final vote. And before we take the final vote, I'm also going to ask programmatic staff that are here if they see any problems with what we're proposing to pull off next year. So, I will be going to the audience and to the staff, but I want the council to focus on its final slate before we pull the final question. So, anyone wishing to speak against the motion on the council? Okay. Ready for the question? On the motion to amend, all those in favor, raise your hand. I have 5. Opposed? Eight in opposition. The motion to amend fails, 5-8. We're back on the main motion as amended. Anything further? Jim Odlin.
Yes. Can I ask Tom a question? Tom, on item number one in Groundfish, was my recollection correct that we did deal in framework 45 with, or we did consider in framework 45 the yellowtail cap for the scallop fisheries and the 100% allocation of the yellowtail needs in the scallop fisheries? Didn't we just do that in framework 45?
In framework 44, we set up where they got 100% in 2010, and then in future years they get, in the next 2 years they got 90%. And so, it was brought up by the Joint Groundfish Scallop Committee, I think, the suggestion that we should consider revising that to 100%.
And then the committee at that time, when it was brought up, decided not to do that in framework, when we were considering framework 45.
Well, it went to the it was reported out to the council, I believe in September. Right. I think it was in September, and I think there was a council vote that accepted all of those recommendations pretty much that came out of the Joint Ground for Scout Committee and said, we'll decide, you know, it didn't go into Framework 45. It went into, you know, the hopper on things that may be talked about. The issue may come up tomorrow during the scallop discussion to some extent.
Jim Fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also on scallops, could I ask if the motion from the scallop committee was addressed at the executive committee meeting or not? It wasn't. Would it be appropriate to make a motion regarding that?
Okay, so the SCOG committee met after the executive committee. Right. Okay, sure, go ahead, Jim.
Well, just for discussion, I'd like to make a motion that the issue of separating state waters and federal waters fisheries for scallops in the Northern Gulf of Maine be added to the amendment.
To the framework, you mean?
To the framework, I'm sorry.
Okay. Be added to Framework 23. Okay. Is there a second? Seconded by Mary Beth. Discussion on the motion to amend? Terry?
Yeah, I guess question for Gene. Is it frameworkable? I've run this up the flagpole twice before, and it's gone nowhere.
Well, I guess, I don't know. So what is being proposed here exactly? Is it to totally separated out? Does it depend on what kind of permit you have? I mean, I don't know the details of what. It's very vague to know. It's too vague, actually, to answer whether it's frameworkable or not.
Okay, the issue is mainly that the fishery is changing up there to the point where the state waters fishery is becoming much more important. The density of scallops is more dense in the state waters. The fishery is moving into state waters, and yet if the state waters landings exceed the TAC, then the entire area closes. So the folks that have federal permits have to abide by the TAC wherever they fish, and it's becoming a problem in that regard that state waters catches could close the entire management area.
Well, so what are you proposing, an exemption for federal permit holders to fish? I still don't have enough details here. Is it, would it be to not close the area based on an overall TAC, or to exempt federally permitted vessels? Those are the kinds of things I think that to paint it in a broader light, is this changing the conceptual approach to managing the Northern Gulf of Maine fishery, or is it just adjusting what's already in the amendment right now, or in the FMP right now? I'm still not getting a clear view of exactly how this would occur. I think the answer might depend on how it's further developed by the committee, and I'll just have to sort of give a ongoing opinion as to whether it's going too far or not. I think that's the best I can say at this point in time. So you can at least broach the subject and see where you want to go with it.
That was my intent. I don't have the answer. I think it may be as simple as not counting the state waters fishery against the quota, but I mean I think it needs to be discussed, and it is presenting a problem for a lot of people in Maine.
Mr. Libby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that there was a TAC based on a survey in federal waters and then they're not including the state waters fishery in the tag or in the survey to set the tag, but the state waters catch is counted against the tag. So that's where the problem is, and it needs to be fixed. Thank you.
Anything further on the motion to amend? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. I have 11. Opposed? 2. Abstentions? 1 abstention. Motion carries 11-2 with 1 abstention. Anything further? Council members have anything further to amend the priorities? Seeing none, I'll go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I want to thank the Executive Committee and the Council for moving forward with allocation in the form of catch shares in the monkfish fishery. I think this will be very beneficial to improving the success of the groundfish management program, as monkfish is such an integral part of that fishery. I am, however, on behalf of our membership, very disappointed that the Council will not consider an amendment for our ITQs in the groundfish fishery. I think if we don't embark on this, on an ITQ for this fishery now, I can't imagine when that's ever going to happen. To the amendment to do the accumulation limits is going to take a considerable amount of time. That would be an appropriate place to also be talking about an ITQ. Those two are logically linked together. I just seems like it'll be 10 years before we can even think about having an ITQ in this fishery. It would solve so many problems. It would solve your herring problem, your haddock cap problem in the herring fishery. It would solve your yellowtail problem in the scallop fishery. It would improve the free flow of allocation between individuals. People would not be forced to buy an entire groundfish permit in order to access one species. It's just, it makes so much sense to do it for so many reasons, and it's just really a huge disappointment that we can't begin working on that now. Thank you.
Anyone else? Ms. Starvish.
Ray Starvis, Jr. Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. Just be brief regarding a previous correspondence by my dad. This has to do with small dredge program, and as follows. We're about to enter a new era in scallop management with ACLs and accountability measures at the forefront. With the scallop fishery at risk of overfishing, I'm asking the council to put the repeal of the small dredge exemption program on its priority list for 2011. But this issue was raised at the August 11th scallop committee meeting, and NOAA General Counsel advised that changing or eliminating this program should be analyzed and considered through an FMP. This program is inclusive in Amendment 4 and was created to be conservation neutral. Simply, a part-time permit was expected to land its Amendment 4 allocation of 40% of a full-time permit and occasional permits 8.3% of full-time under the small dredge exemption program. An analysis of 2009 landings shows the small dredge fleet is landing 5.2 million pounds above its Amendment 4 allocation. It's wrong to allow this fishing to continue. I request the analysis leading to the repeal of the small dredge exemption program be a 2011 FMP priority. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Patrick Paquette, recreational fishing advocate, depending on what subject and on the one that I'm going to speak to you right now about. It's 22 recreational fishing organizations throughout New England, including two from Maine that I picked up representing in the last week. I'm very concerned about the priorities list now with this new haddock bycatch amendment. As a charter boat owner and operator, when I'm not doing this, I watched the fleet pulse fish off the backside of the Cape, and all of a sudden we were pollock fishing instead of striped bass fishing about 2 months ago. And the service did a really good job. In the last year, at watching this number, that we haven't broken the cap once yet since the cap was put in place. There's been some discussion at the council that I would tell you that the record completely disagrees with as to how that cap was set originally. I think that a review of the Amendment 1 FSEIS would show response from the National Marine Fisheries Service that would be in direct conflict with some of the stuff that was said at the microphone today. I don't think a case for the problem has been made to you, but it seems automatically we've got a framework moving, or we're about to have a framework moving, and it just doesn't seem, with Amendment 5 not done, with the industry every time they come into the microphone telling us about the next loophole, with all due respect, we don't know what area they're referring to, the 100% observer coverage. This seems very rushed, and I'm going to agree with Mayor Lang, who this morning in the paper talked about problems with things happening at this council that are not adequately put to the public. And this room would have been filled with charter boat operators, I'm going to guess environmentalists, and I guarantee you individual recreational fishermen, if we had thought that a framework to increase more haddock and dump more haddock over the sides of boats, we would have filled this room this morning, but we had no idea except for a letter and a hint at one minuscule conversation that lasted about 7 minutes at ASMFC. Like, it was not on the agenda. There was this one letter that was from one company. I mean, a couple of years ago, we put multiple letters by many small companies and a couple of big companies that said that the haddock bycatch issue was a problem. And we increased the cap, and now one letter from one company, we only had one industry representative come to the table and say, hey, start this, and you're going to start a framework. Please give the public the opportunity to come in. Can we get a few frameworks going? Because we got wiped out in the backside of the Cape by this fleet, and they haven't even been shut down on this haddock cap. At a certain point in time, no is no. Please stick by the wise decisions you made. The haddock cap is working. I mean, this year has gone from 1989 to now. I could read you a list of quotes that we've developed. But this gear went from, we can't catch ground fish because we're spatially separated from the bottom, to at the last herring committee meeting talking about that they fish on the bottom and that bottom tending net sensors will be ripped off on, to quote Mr. Mullen, every toe. This is now ground fish gear. I'm sorry, but to give them more ground fish, it's just insane. And this seems like a very rushed edition of this list, that even just to put it in the priorities, I believe it should have been put to the public. And I'd ask you to seriously, seriously consider that this is being done way too fast.
Jeff Pike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Pike, and I am here today on behalf of the majority of the limited access scallop vessel owners to ask the council to support a pilot program for leasing in the scallop fishery. I traveled more than 400 miles this morning to get here to speak in favor of a motion which was already taken, the vote taken, so I'll be very brief. But since the Newport meeting, many vessel owners, particularly single vessel owners and owners of two boats, we've recruited more than 60 vessels, and that's just by word of mouth. We don't have some fancy press machine that goes out. Most of these vessel owners thought that leasing was, in fact, going to be endorsed by the council, since in Amendment 15, The council made this a preferred alternative. The SCALP committee endorsed that. The vote was very close. And since that vote, I actually spoke to Dave Preble, who's not here, who strongly supports and asked me to voice his support for the pilot program. While the council may have decided not to address excess capacity in the fishery, the problem didn't go away, and it's not going away. It persists, and planned cuts in days at sea for 2011 and 12 will mean the vessels are tied up to the dock even longer. To be clear, a pilot program is not going to, in and of itself, reduce capacity, but it will provide a path, an opportunity to demonstrate that conservation-neutral program can be implemented and administered without disadvantaging others. Many of our new supporters were not fans of stacking, and personally, I think dealing with stacking and leasing in the same hearings and the same amendment caused some confusion. Leasing, however, is showing to be the common denominator for the majority of the industry, and they embrace it and they support it now. So I would just ask that you keep that in mind. I know you've already voted to reject Mary Beth's amendment, which we strongly supported. But ignoring excess capacity won't make it go away, and I wish you would reconsider putting in a pilot program. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is Paul Wexer. I own a few scallop boats in New Bedford. First off, I have a couple of things I wanted to get off my chest here. But one of the first things is, as far as the pilot program, none of the players in that have changed. If you look at the list, it's the same players, it's the same individuals. That being said, number two, that list hasn't been vetted. I see that my boat is on that. My boat is the only Miss Shauna that has a permit, and it's on that list. That being said, I would more favor something like Dr. Spear said, an ITQ that was equitable to everybody so that nobody pays for anyone else's overfishing. That being one thing. The second thing would be I wouldn't support Mr. Stavish's thing of the one drag thing. That would mean going back 10 to 15 years, and we'd have to review all the different categories, general category, everything else, to get back to what the intended levels were for all those different categories. And the third and final thing that I think is a problem in the scallop fishery is, seems like every year we end up having to wait until July to get some of these closed area trips. And it looks like this year, three out of the four closed area trips were not going to actually be accessible till after the July date. And this, I think, is a problem. I think we need to prioritize that to get those things approved a lot earlier, because that puts us fishing in those areas in the wintertime when the yield is 30% lower. And it just seems like every year we're forced to fish further and further out into the year where the yields are lower, and it's, to me, it's mismanagement of the fishery. I just, this year, especially where it looks like three of the four closed area trips are going to be not until after July, which is going to force a major portion of those scallops to be caught in the winter months when the yields are lowest. Thank you.
So ask anybody on the staff if they have any comments for the council before we vote through the priorities. Lori?
Okay. The decision to add a new framework adjustment to deal with the haddock catch cap is going to have some implications on the timeline and the workload for the development of Amendment 5. So I think the council needs to be clear about that when making the final decision, and be clear for me and those of us who will be working on these actions what the priorities are. But my understanding is that if this moves forward and there is a Framework 47 to deal with the groundfish or the haddock catch cap, in order to have that implemented in 2011, for the fishery when it would need to be implemented. We're looking at essentially a January-April timeline for the decisions to be made on the framework, which are the next two council meetings. So passing the motion with this added to the priority list, for me, brings this to the top of the priority list, which would mean that we would be very hard-pressed to get the Amendment 5 alternatives in front of the council for approval at the January council meeting. Although it's a groundfish framework, I would say the majority of the work is herring-related work and technical work from the herring plan development team. Obviously, the groundfish plan development team and the groundfish committee is going to be involved, but from the groundfish fishing mortality perspective, impacts on the resources, the groundfish resource, I'm thinking that the analysis isn't going to be as complicated because we're not in a real resource crisis there, but in terms of the impacts on the herring fishery, it'll be somewhat extensive. Obviously, we can simplify the framework, but just from what you've heard at the discussion today, it's not going to be just as simple as saying, okay, we're going to take the catch cap and we're going to increase it. There are all kinds of issues that have to be dealt with related to the catch cap. For example, decoupling Gulf of Maine and Georges Bay and Caddick. That's a big issue that we need to deal with, and how to identify where the fish are caught, what stocks the fish come from, whether or not there would be separate caps or things like that. It's something that has to be discussed. How the cap is set, is it going to be related to observer coverage? We don't really even know what the levels of observer coverage are going to be because we haven't finished Amendment 5 yet. So how do we implement, how do we set a mechanism to set a cap that links it somehow to what we're doing in Amendment 5? Needs to be discussed. How the cap's going to be monitored. Will there be extrapolation? Right now there isn't because it's only monitored through what's observed, but that all relates to how we initially set the cap. If we're going to do extrapolations, we may be setting the cap differently. So the framework isn't just going to be simply let's increase the cap. It's going to be a framework to consider all of the issues associated with setting a catch cap in this fishery and linking that catch cap to both the status of the resource in the groundfish fishery as well as the fishing activity in the herring fishery and the monitoring program for herring. So as long as everybody's clear on that, I just don't see how we can get this rolling as a priority and get the Amendment 5 alternatives in front of the council for January. I've got a herring committee meeting planned. I've got three planned, November 30th, December 20th, and January 20th, but at least one of those meetings, we'd have to be shifting gears and dealing with the haddock catch cap in preparation for the January council meeting, which is going to delay some of our work on Amendment 5. Not to mention that we'll have to do some coordinating with the groundfish committee and the groundfish plan development team between now and January. So if this motion passes, with the addition of Framework 47, unless I hear otherwise from the council, my understanding is that is now the top priority for herring. And yes, it is a groundfish action, but it's a herring issue. So that would be my understanding if this motion passes. Not to say that we would completely stop work on Amendment 5, but we certainly, I don't think there can be an expectation that we'll have those alternatives ready to go for the council to approve at the January council meeting. When we added river herring catch caps and everything else to this amendment, we're facing a tall order trying to do that alone for the January council meeting, never mind doing an additional framework. So that's the situation, and as long as everybody's clear on that when they vote, we'll go forward from there.
So right now, Amendment 5 for herring has us voting in September of 2011, implementation January 2012. I feel like what you're telling us is that you're going to take 3 months or 4 months to stop Amendment 5 and deal with this new framework. So we'd be looking at an implementation of roughly May of 2012?
I mean, right now, the only thing that we really knew is that we were going to try to get the alternatives approved for the draft EIS in January. If we could do that, the EIS would either be ready to go in June or September. Everything is sort of a little bit loose after that. At this point, all I can say is that if this framework becomes the top priority for a January-April type of timeline, we're not going to be able to get the alternatives for Amendment 5 ready by January. Everything will get pushed back some period of time, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months.
So it's not just the top priority for the herring PDT, it would be the top priority for the groundfish PDT?
Oh, I don't want to speak for the groundfish PDT. It would be a top priority for me in terms of working with Tom and the groundfish PDT and the herring PDT to get the work done. Some of the herring PDT members would obviously need to be involved in it, as would some of the groundfish PDT members. It's a matter of juggling work. I just don't think it's going to be possible to move forward with the current Amendment 5 timeline and not hit any delays by adding in this additional framework. My understanding is this would be my top priority to get this done to bring something forward for the council in January if this passes.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about how you and Tom imagine this might play out in terms of who leads the development. It would be groundfish, right? But you... PDT staff would need to, herring PDT staff would need to put down Amendment 5 when groundfish PDT handed things over, or the groundfish committee handed things over to the herring side of the equation. So I just need to think, I want to hear it vocalized so that people have the right expectations. So it sounds like from your perspective, Amendment 5 is delayed. To what extent, you can't tell us because it's a big long timeline between here and there, but certainly going to be delayed more than we thought it was. And then on the groundfish side, I guess I'd like to hear from the PDT chair about how he feels he's going to balance this. If the council says that Framework 47 is going to be a priority, how he imagines moving forward with the committee chair and setting meetings and accomplishing the setting of all the ACLs and AMs, as well as accomplishing this Haddock Catch Cap review. I think the council needs to understand what the impacts might be.
Just from the herring perspective, I'll let Tom speak to the groundfish issues. I mean, when we did Framework 43, I believe the groundfish plan development team took the lead on it, but the herring plan development team was actively involved in the development of the analysis and things, and I certainly remember putting in a good deal amount of time into that framework. I'm happy to let the groundfish plan development team do all of it. But I think there will be some issues that inevitably the herring, potentially the committee and advisors, and definitely the plan development team would want to weigh in on, which include things like how the cap relates to levels of observer coverage in the fishery and whether or not extrapolation from observer coverage would be appropriate, how port site sampling data may play into tallying against the cap, and also any sort of gear or area or spatial temporal components of how the cap would relate to the fishery. So I don't think you're going to get away without having a good deal of herring technical work done, but to the extent that the groundfish plan development team can take the lead on it, I'm happy about that.
Our priority, once this meeting is over, is going to be submitting Framework 45. I think NIMS wants it ideally they'd like it by December 1st. That's not going to happen. But they're going to probably want to get it sometime in December so that they can try and get it implemented in time. And then the implementation of that amendment is going to suck up some time from the people on the other side at NIMS as they work through that. With respect to the ACLs and that type of work, I don't really think we'll get rolling on that at our PDT until sometime after this SSC meeting next, which is in December. Until Lori had mentioned we're looking at a final vote in January or April if you wanted to have in place in the fishing year, I hadn't really thought of it moving it that fast. I mean, I think January is probably pretty darn unrealistic to think we're going to bring it back by then. We haven't had a chance to talk, so I can't answer you on how we're going to coordinate this.
Right. I'd
be glad to let Lori take the lead on this thing, but
you guys can draw straws. So you're right, Tom. You reminded me. You know, later on in this meeting, we're going to vote, hopefully vote out 45, and then you've got some administrative work and back and forth with the service to submit that document. So the earliest you would begin, you would convene the PDT to work on Framework 46 and or Framework 47 wouldn't be until the middle of December at the earliest, which is holiday time, so probably January.
Yeah, I think you're, you know, the earliest, I mean, nothing's going to happen between now and Thanksgiving, right? I mean, that's next week. So, and then December starts right after that. So I think, you know, the first or second week of December is the earliest the PDT is really going to talk about this stuff.
And then the Groundfish Committee is going to drive the range with respect to Framework 47. The Groundfish Committee is going to be tasked with driving the range of the alternatives for the Haddock Catch Cap review. So the PDT can bring some things forward, but until they know what the committee wants or recommends, the PDT is really not going to get cranking on it. So I'm just trying to, like be realistic here. Do we really think we can come back and even in April, even if it is our priority at the groundfish and herring technical side, technical staff side, do we think April's a legitimate or realistic target for a final vote?
Well, I think it's going to depend on the scope of the alternatives.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to depend on the scope of the alternatives and how complicated or how much detail we try and go into the alternatives. You know, there's a lot of these issues that Herring has been wrestling with through their amendment, monitoring, industry funding, all that kind of stuff that I'm not sure they've solved them for their amendment. If we think we're going to solve those in a framework in 3 months, we're kidding ourselves. You know, but you know, there's other issues. I mean, you know, you're talking about a level of haddock bycatch at 0.2%. This is the only fishery that, in groundfish, we try and have a sub ACL at that low a level. You know, every other fishery, we sort of say, you know, if we lump it into the other 5% category until that starts to become a problem, then we'll deal with it. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a much smaller amount than that. But, you know, that's not a popular suggestion to make, that we treat it the same way. So, you know, I don't have any illusions that that's going to survive.
Okay. Any other questions from the council before we see if there are other staff that have concerns? Doug Grout?
Yeah, if we were to not be able to get the first meeting for the framework till April, that means in June we would potentially be making the decision. Is that even going to be able to have those measures in place for the time period when this thing, the fishery, takes place? I mean, that. Originally, I'll be honest with you, my motion to amend was going to have it included in Framework 46, but I saw the need to try and get something, see if we could get something in this year. But I'm having second thoughts if it's going to be at the expense of Amendment 5, which I think it's very important that we approve the range of alternatives at this January meeting.
Yeah, my suggestion would be that we let the process take its course, and if the final vote ends up being in June, that then we ask the service to implement those as an emergency action at that time, while the framework finishes up its regulatory hurdles, because obviously if it's voted in June, it's not going to be implemented for some period after that. But that would be, to me, a much more acceptable solution than trying to ask for emergency action now for something that we may be able to create a regulatory solution for, but may not be able to implement in time to be useful for this year.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, this is some of the concerns I had when we were talking about which direction to go in. And why I was a little concerned about having it be a separate framework to be implemented in 2011. I appreciate David's comment. I would have just a question for Pat, but she's having a conversation, so I'll wait. Just a question, Pat. David's suggestion was that should we find ourselves in a situation where we're making final decisions in June, that we could ask the agency for an emergency action at that time. But there's a process for an emergency action that also takes time. And I would just question, you know, from your perspective, how much time does it take you to do an emergency action? You have to get, you know, exemptions from regular rulemaking process, and it's not immediate. I mean, my understanding.
Well, first, no, you could not ask for an emergency in June because one of the basic criteria for asking for an emergency is that a situation was unanticipated, and I don't think after this discussion and the work that gets done, you're going to be able to make that argument. So that, you know, I don't think the emergency in the back pocket is an option. As for how long it takes, it depends. I mean, it's the same kind of questions the staff have been asking. You know, the council tends to sort of vote for these emergencies and then have the discussion afterward about what might or might not be in them, with the realization that it's a lot more complicated than everybody thought. And so if it's a fairly straightforward emergency and there aren't these sort of layers of options available for addressing the problem that's identified, then theoretically it can be done in a month or two. And if it's more complicated, then we've had emergencies that have taken several more months than that.
I think we've had this discussion before, but what's the difference between, I always thought an interim action was when the council takes its final vote to implementation, you ask the secretary to implement what we just voted on. In the interim between implementation and council vote?
Well, interim actions, as the agency has interpreted it, can only be used to address overfishing. This would not be that situation.
Lori.
Just in talking with Tom, I think it's reasonable for this framework, if this moves forward as a priority, that the first meeting could be the January council meeting, and then we could shoot for April for the final meeting and see how things go. And it will depend on how complicated the range of alternatives gets to be. But, you know, presumably Tom and I could work between now and January to put together some background information and some sort of straw man of potential alternatives. I have a January 20th committee meeting that we could essentially turn into a joint groundfish and herring committee meeting, and the council could take a look at the alternatives for the framework at the initial meeting in January, and then we could go do the analysis and get ready for the final decision making. But right there, that throws us off of our timeline for Amendment 5. The Amendment 5 alternatives would probably not come forward in January. We could shoot for April, which would result in a three-month delay, but I can't really assure that we'd be able to meet that timeline either.
Anything further? Any other staff concerns? Deirdre.
It's not a concern. I just don't want people to have the wrong impression. The three very specific things that were identified for this scallop framework are definitely doable if they don't expand. I just, similar to what Jean commented about the Northern Gulf of Maine one, it's my impression so far the ideas, while it's vague right now, any of the ideas actually that would be developed are the same ideas that have been discussed and bounced around for years. And at that time or in the past, the suggestion was that it be an amendment. So I don't understand that anything's changed. So I don't want people to have the wrong impression or be disappointed if you soon learn that they can't be done in a framework.
Thanks for the reminder, Dee. Any other staff concerns? Okay, Paul Howard.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I have some concern about Whiting and need a clarification. I think you mentioned that limited entry could be considered. And you know, my recollection of our discussions was limited entry is going to be extremely controversial. It includes whiting fisheries down in the mid-Atlantic. And when you set limited entry, it takes a lot longer than a year is our, you know, experience. So ACLs and AMs are a requirement from the reauthorization. We'll be late with whiting because of the lack of science. But nevertheless, I think it would take a much longer if you allow limited entry to be considered, and it's still below the line unless there's a motion. So I think we need an expectation from staff. What do you want to do with limited entry with whiting?
Well, I mean, you want, as the committee chair, all I was saying is that if, as we try to develop accountability measures, it becomes clear that in an open access fishery, they're very difficult to develop, and limited access rises to the top as something that can be done and can be done by the time that this needs to be submitted, that we don't rule it out, you know, during priority setting. Because I'm still, nobody's made it clear to me how you can have accountability measures in an open access fishery that actually work other than some very broad-based thing that just shuts down the fishery. I think a lot of people are very concerned that with this situation developing, because this is the first time we've tried to do this in an open access fishery.
I think, you know, our top priority, Dave and Whiting, is getting the ACLs on the books. And, you know, our exchange previous was that, yeah, sure, you can discuss limited access, but it may get to a point where you need to just forward the ACLs and the AMs, which may just be a closure of the fishery, and continue to develop limited access behind that, trail it.
Right, I understand that, and we'll make that very plain right up front, but I suspect it's like everything else with the fishing industry. If you tell them you've got a chance to do this now and get it done by a time certain, or it's given the history of whiting, it might fall off the radar screen for the next 25 years, and you'll be stuck with a hard tack that closes the fishery forever and ever, that a lot of this opposition may kind of vanish pretty quickly. That's my hope, anyway. But I just don't want to be precluded from at least trying to do it. That's all.
No, and I understand your sensitivity to that. I think you're accurate there. Anything further? Council members? Doug Grout?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is, based on staff interpretation, if we're based on our motion here concerning Framework 47, since we wanted implemented in 2011, is that that would take priority over herring. I have extreme concern with that. I think we've already delayed the implementation of this amendment. I think we need to complete the work on this amendment before we start moving forward with any other actions that may affect it. And so my question for you is, what do we have, what kind of a motion will we need to state in our priorities that Herring Amendment 5 would take priority over Framework 47, because I have no problem with moving forward with 47 once we get Amendment 5, at least range of alternatives out for consideration. Does that need some kind of a motion to state Herring Amendment 5 would take priority over Framework 47, because if so, I'd be willing to make it.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel much more comfortable having explicit direction as to where prioritization falls relative to Framework 47, Amendment 5, and Framework 46 for the groundfish plan, because without that, I think we're opening ourselves up to revisionist history. And we don't do the staff any service or the public any service by not specifically stating we're going to put aside Amendment 5 and Herring, and we're going to go to work on increasing or changing the haddock cap in the herring for the herring fishery, and then we'll pick up Amendment 5. And I think we need to have it very clear, the order of business. So if you wanted to make a motion to that effect, Doug, go ahead.
The question, would this be an amendment to this? Because it's not really it's not changing the priorities.
it would be making a clarification on this. And so I want to make this correctly. You know, if we had adopted these priorities and then wanted to come up with a separate motion that said within these priorities, Amendment 5 would take precedence over Framework 47. I'm just trying to get a clarity.
Yeah, you're really, best to do this. It's a rank ordering of, you know, of the priorities. You're rank ordering them. And so I would be much more comfortable if you would state specifically, amend this to say it is intended or it is the intent of the council that, blah, blah, blah. Go ahead, Doug.
I'd like to make a motion that it is the intent of the council that hiring Amendment 5 take priority and over the initiation of Framework 47 as outlined today in the groundfish plan.
There's a second. Seconded by Mike Leary. Discussion. Mary Beth.
Well, I think what I'd like more than anything is to eat lunch, but I feel like we're kind of starting the whole discussion over again. I mean, you know, to accomplish this in 2011, then it's going to take some time to do it on a fast track. Otherwise, we could put it in Framework 46 and ask for an emergency action and not disrupt Amendment 5 at all. I mean, if that's really what people want to do. My concern with this motion is, and actually I would like the committee to try to move these things simultaneously, to not drop 5 and to initiate 47 at the same time. But if you interpret this, that PDT would prioritize Amendment 5, if you're not going to ever get to Amendment 47. The PDT work on Amendment 5, they haven't even started analyzing options. The committee needs to finish, you know, defining the options. The council needs to approve them. And then the PDT has a whole bunch of work. So if you literally interpret this motion, you're going to get to Framework 47 sometime in 2012. So I agree with Doug's intent that we not put off finalizing what alternatives we're going to have in Amendment 5, that we stick to the time frame for January to have them before the council. I think Lori already has 3 meetings outlined, and we need to figure out how we're going to initiate Framework 47. But we need to do both, or this doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. We will not have it implemented in time to be effective for the fishery in 2011 if we don't start the process.
Doug?
Would it help if I modified this motion to take out the word initiate? Still accomplish the same thing, but we're giving guidance from the council's perspective to the staff what takes priority and let them decide how best to accomplish that. The intent of this motion is to not delay the implementation schedule of Amendment 5 while trying to move forward with some kind of a management action to address the to look at the potential of addressing the haddock bycatch cap.
Dr. Pierce?
I don't think the language changes the situation in that, you know, Lori will, as you said, take heed of the motion and she'll work on Amendment 5 solely. And we will then, in this, for all practical purposes, we should go start at the beginning again and consider putting it into Framework 46, because that's what it will equate to, back into Framework 46 for 2012 implementation. Mary Beth is quite correct. If this motion passes, I'm going to have to at some point in time make a motion for emergency action and throw it into the hands of the National Marine Fisheries Service, because if it doesn't happen in 2011, then there will be dire consequences for the herring fleet. So they say, not just one processor, but the Sustainable Fisheries Coalition. Okay, read the letters. The letters are very compelling in terms of likely bankruptcy, et cetera, impact on mackerel fishery. I don't want to go over everything I said earlier on today, but, again, I understand the staff's concerns. Nevertheless, my concerns happen to be for action that will be timely, that will avoid a very likely bankruptcy of major components of the sea herring fishery.
On the motion to amend, any further comment? Terry?
Yeah, I view it as concurrent priorities. I agree with Doug that we need to get the herring amendment out at the January meeting, but by all means, we need to move forward with addressing the haddock bycatch. It is, in fact, a component of the amendment itself. If we're looking at criteria for access to closed areas, I couple it together. So I can't support this motion.
Anything further? Michael.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually kind of laughable because this was a priority 2 or 3 years ago, and then we split Amendment 5 off of Amendment 4, and we thought it would be maybe 4 months late. If we go doing Rule 47, I might term out before that's over. And, what's going to stop the scallop people from coming in and want to have an amendment to get more yellowtail scallops for the closed area? I mean, a bycatch cap is a bycatch cap. If you reach it, you reach it. I mean, we just can't keep adjusting it. So I would like to get Amendment 5 done and then move on to 47.
Anything further? Dave Gaffel.
I think a lot of the issues in Amendment 5 may be solvable by this framework. I think a lot of the issues revolve around mandatory observer coverage, splitting up these areas, things like that. And I think, for example, if you ended up with a situation where you had you split the areas up, the three areas, and you had a haddock bycatch cap in Area 3, and you had individual vessel bycatch caps, and you required mandatory observer coverage in order to enforce those individual bycatch caps, a lot of Amendment 5 is solved. Because you've got a lot of the issues that are in Amendment 5 right now, taken care of right there. And Amendment 5 becomes a lot simpler. And if people want to complicate this framework and hold it up, they're welcome to. But when they do that, they're basically shooting themselves in the foot, because then the haddock bycatch cap will be reached, the area will shut down, and that'll be the end of the discussion. So I see a lot of positive things here where people, for a number of different reasons, may decide to stop making this process difficult and start moving it forward as fast as they can, because the alternatives are far starker than the status quo.
Anything further? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. I have 8. Opposed? I have 5. The motion to amend carries 8-5. I'm going to call for a lunch break. I thought we could get through priorities. I really wanted to, but I think we're going to we're just going to keep going here. So why don't we take a break? It's 2:10 by my watch. Be back at 3:30. Okay, welcome back. As is obvious, we're behind schedule. I just want to talk briefly before we go back to priorities. I want to talk briefly about what you can expect for the rest of the day. Obviously, we're going to finish our priority discussion. It is the most important debate and discussion this body has on an annual basis. So I feel it's important to provide enough opportunity for us to get it right and to agree as a body on how to move forward. If you look at the remainder or the balance of the agenda, I'm recommending and planning on moving the Enforcement Committee report to the first thing tomorrow morning. It's not a very long report, but I'd like to clear the deck today on that and push that to first thing tomorrow morning. I do intend to, after we finish the priorities, go right to the SSC report, and I do intend to run that for the 2 hours that we've scheduled. I'm not going to cut that discussion short. And then we're going to have a one-hour briefing on coastal and marine spatial planning. So those are the items we're going to take up after we finish priorities. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, that's how we will proceed. Is there anyone in the audience that's here specifically for the enforcement Agenda item. The agenda item. Is there anyone in the audience? Okay. Back to the council. Mike?
Yeah, Rodney's the chairman of the enforcement committee. He's not here. Is he going to be here tomorrow?
I don't think so. But Captain Pete can deliver the report, unless you're offering to do that.
I actually missed that. It's one meeting I missed. I overslept and woke up like a week later.
Well, there's a summary in the binder. I guess you could study up and present tomorrow if you'd like. Actually, Captain Pete will handle that tomorrow. Anything further on the agenda adjustment? Okay, seeing nothing, going back to priorities. We have a set of priorities as amended. Anything further? Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to throw a hand grenade. And I asked a question to you earlier about staffing and timeline issues for scallops, and it's relates to the 3 years worth of work that the committee's done and trying to address overcapacity and with leasing and stacking falling below the bar. I mean, the one issue that I think, and Dr. Pierce, I wish was here right now, because following up on his comments is taking a hard look at IFQs. So I am going to make an motion that following completion of Framework 23, that we initiate an amendment to develop IFQs in scallop fishery. And I'll provide rationale if I get a second.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Fair. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, my rationale is I mean, there's been a lot of concern, a lot of heartache, and a lot of questions asked, and I'm not sure whether or not I'd support this in the end. The number of industry members do and don't at this point, but to not look this square in the eyes, particularly when we are going to have this catch shares workshop and determine the goals and objectives, the issues and recommendations for the program, including communities and CFAs and all, I think it's the responsible thing to do if we're going to really address capacity. Some of the work's been done, a lot of it hasn't. I would, and there's no question in my mind that if this does move ahead, there's a bucket load of work to do, and before it would ever be approved, it's going to go through the referendum process. The industry will have plenty of opportunity through the development to either shape it or dump it. But I think that we should run it up the flagpole and see where it goes.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. One of the things from the workshops we've had and from some of the dialogue with other councils is that the IFQ programs work best when they're developed from the bottom up. And we have some special considerations for IFQ programs in New England. And rather go through 2 years, 3 years worth of work, I was wondering if we could amend this to say, let's send out some type of a permit letter or something and try to gauge the communities on developing a program before we jump into developing one. And I think that if we ever did a blueprint on how to do programs, I would think that would jump up to gauge the stakeholders first before we jump into it, especially where you need a two-thirds majority. Or is it two-thirds? So I would recommend that we have some type of letter to permit holders and gauge the interest.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I was opposed to the inclusion of the catch share workshop because I was concerned about its impact on specific to the Monkfish Amendment, but I absolutely concur with your thought here. I don't want to brush this. I don't want to cram it down industry's throat. If it does move ahead, it's got to come through and with industry, and I would look for some help in amending this motion to respond to the issues that, important issues that you raise.
Right now we have Framework 23 on the board for scallop. What's the timeline like on that? I know it hasn't been written yet, but what are we looking at? I'll ask Dee to come up.
Not sure what will happen with the Northern Gulf of Maine thing you added today, but for the two issues that were on the list originally, I couldn't see why we wouldn't be able to finish, you know, before the year is up, September-ish.
So next September,
final action.
November. Okay, thank you. Anything further, Mary Beth?
Just to Paul's suggestion, I don't necessarily think it's a bad suggestion, but I do have some concerns. I think there's a lot of misconceptions in various communities about what ITQs can do, don't do, how you can structure them. I think we hear a lot of references to the CLAM ITQ, which I know that the Mid-Atlantic is going to do some review of that program. And to just send out a letter to say, what do you think about ITQs, I'm concerned about what kind of feedback we'd get and what level of knowledge or information or perception people have of what that would mean. I think we would need to do some work before sending a letter like that. I'm not sure exactly how one would structure it, but, you know, maybe the committee would need to spend some time to think about how to describe that to the public or something. But just to send out a letter that says the council's considering development of an ITQ program, we'd like your feedback, I don't think that's really going to get us where we need to go. I just, you know, we need to do more than that.
Anything further on the motion to amend? So if you pass this, this would come after Framework 23, and Framework 23 is going to take the better part of next year to complete and submit. So what you're basically saying is next year, at the end of next calendar year, probably a year from now, we intend to take up an amendment in the scallop fishery, scoping for ITQs or IFQs. Okay? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Count 13, that's unanimous. All members present voting in the affirmative. Anything further? Rick?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, on an unrelated matter, we did have some discussion earlier about the possibility of trying to have some sort of dialogue between the Mid-Atlantic's S&B Committee and New England's Herring Committee to discuss compatibility or consistency of measures related to Amendment 5 and Amendment 14. It appears that Amendment 5 is being prioritized now ahead of the groundfish action, and the implication of that is that at your January meeting, you would hopefully be taking a final action, at least on the selection of alternatives that would go into the public hearing document. And if that is, in fact, the case, and that doesn't get delayed until the April meeting, I would suggest that we work hard to try to create some sort of opportunity, perhaps in January, to have some dialogue between those two committees. I don't know if that would allow enough time for a joint meeting or simply a webinar, some other format like that where we could have some discussion between the committees to discuss the possibility of trying to achieve consistent measures between those two actions. Our FMAT is meeting today. Our committee, our council, rather, at the December meeting will review those FMAT recommendations. The options would then be developed, presumably, through a committee meeting in January. And I can certainly work with our staff to try to coordinate that as early as possible. But, you know, we'd like to try to achieve some sort of opportunity there for some conversation between the two committees. And if it slips until April, obviously, be much easier to get together the two groups, but I'm not going to advocate for delaying Amendment 5 at this point, but would rather just try to create an opportunity there for dialogue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rick. I certainly see the wisdom in trying to sync up the measures in 5 and your amendment as well, and we'll see where we end up in terms of timing and how quickly you all move along and how quickly we don't move along, which seems to be the trend at the moment. Lori?
Um, Not to belabor the issue, but just really quickly, before the main motion passes for the priorities, I just want to make sure that I'm clear and that everyone else is clear on how the herring actions are resolved. We have one motion that says to initiate Framework 47 for implementation in 2011, and we have another motion that says that Amendment 5 is the priority above Framework 47. Recognizing that we're going to be working on Amendment 5 for most of next year, I just want to be clear on what the priorities are and what the direction is to the committee between now and January.
To your herring committee? Right, because I think, as we've discussed previously, the groundfish committee is going to start Framework 47, right? I mean, they're going to tee it up and define it. So they'll start it, and when your process is, when the herring committee and herring PDT is available to take the handoff, they'll take it and do what they need to do and then pass it back to the groundfish committee. So the process, as I see it, is managing your time and using your discretion on the PDT such that when opportunities are available, when there's no work currently being done on Amendment 5, if there is something that the groundfish PDT or groundfish committee needs the herring PDT to do, if you are available to do it, go ahead. But don't allow Framework 47 work to supersede work that you could be doing on Amendment 5. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, I'm not clear what the groundfish timelines are. So is that if the groundfish committee is going to start work on it whenever they can, I mean, is the goal still to try to get it, the initial meeting in front of this council as early in 2011 as possible?
For Framework 47?
For the initial meeting to identify the range of alternatives and things like that. I mean, is that something that the groundfish committee needs to be working on for the January council meeting, or is that, do we just resolve these timelines later? I'm not sure what everybody's expectations are.
It's a groundfish action, and the groundfish committee is going to define the range of alternatives. The herring PDT, I believe, as you've stated, is going to need to be involved in analyzing those alternatives from a herring perspective, right?
Probably.
Well, I mean, that's what you've said.
Yeah,
a couple of times.
It depends on how this whole thing unfolds. The groundfish committee could take this, and the groundfish committee and the groundfish PDT could do almost all of the work without much herring technical work involved. But I'm not sure what the alternatives are going to end up, what issues are going to end up being addressed. I mean, the simpler you keep it, you know, obviously the more the groundfish committee and PDT could handle.
Tom?
Well, now I'm more confused than I was before. I mean, if the point is to have the groundfish committee do all the work and then wait for the herring committee, how does Framework 47 fit in with the other groundfish priorities? As Laurie said, do you still want the first framework meeting in January? Because if you want the first framework meeting in January, she's not going to be done with Amendment 5 by then. So does the groundfish committee just bring the framework document forward without any discussion with the herring committee at that point?
This is a groundfish discussion, right? It's a groundfish action. The haddock catch cap was created in a groundfish action.
It was created in a...
Okay. Yeah, it was created in groundfish action, Framework 43. And we have in the draft priorities right now Framework 47, which is Framework 47 of the groundfish plan.
Yes, and you also have the accumulation limits, I think, is still in the priorities, and you have Framework 46 still in the priorities. No one has said where Framework 47 fits in that. And if you expect Framework 47 to require work from the herring folks, that they're not going to do till they get done with Amendment 5, what is the reality that this is going to be get done in fishing year 2011, which is the whole point of the action?
Right. And the motion from Doug Grout was he doesn't want to slow down, and the council voted they don't want to slow down or use the herring PDT to stop. They don't want to use it from Framework 47 if it means slowing down or stopping Amendment 5. So the question is, because Lori brought up the issue that this will slow down Amendment 5. So Doug answered that question, and the council voted on it.
Yes, and the council hasn't addressed how Framework 47 fits in with the other groundfish priorities.
Right. So that's what we're, that's
so
what
that's, that's an open question still.
That's right. And that's why I asked the question before, does this supersede the fleet diversity and accumulation cap number 3? NMFS is going to handle the state permit bank issue, or at least take the lead on it. And we have Framework 46, which is specs that have to be done by date certain so that those specs are on the books for 2012. So staff has asked, where does Framework 47 rank in the priorities for groundfish? Mary Beth.
Well, you know, it's not possible for this framework to be implemented in 2011 unless the Herring PDT participates in the process somewhere along the line. They will not be done with Amendment 5 at any time during 2011. I mean, we've, you know, the committee and the PDT would hope to have the range of alternatives for council approval in January. That's one step in the process. That doesn't mean the PDT is going to stop working on Amendment 5 once that happens. So to say to, you know, to the Herring Committee and the PDT that they have to, you know, place Amendment 5 above Framework 47 means that they will not be working on Framework 47 at all in 2011. That's what it means. And that's the crazy, that doesn't work. And, I mean, unless you want the groundfish PDT to do all of the work. I mean, that's really what you're talking about here. And I would think that, in to your question, that to get it done in 2011, that Framework 47 would have to be a priority, would have to be the number one priority. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. I mean, I think you can start Framework 46 in process, but we're talking about having something back before the council in January and taking final action in April for it to really be effective. And if that's what we want to do, that's fine, but I mean, to say that the Herring PDT is not going to be available till they're done with Amendment 5 is totally unrealistic. To run the Amendment 5 and the framework parallel and to keep that, you know, that primary goal of having the range of alternatives for January for Amendment 5, I think is important and I think it's doable. But to say that, you know, the PDT is going to be totally unavailable for this framework until they're done with Amendment 5, you're talking about 2012. So how does that jive with a framework that we won in 2011? It just doesn't. I don't see where it works.
I thought the motion was revised to allow for that we would set Herring Amendment 5 as the priority, but unless I've misunderstood Lori's workload here, if Amendment 5 is the only thing that you can work on for the rest of the year with the staff that we have, you know, I thought there would be places in the development where of Amendment 5 where there might be some breaks where things could be worked on, particularly once we got the range of alternatives out. Now, I know you're going to be working very hard on the draft EIS after that, but isn't there some place that some small amount of work that would be needed for a simple Framework 47 action be something that could be fit in there once we get the ball rolling on this, on Amendment 5?
Well, I mean, I suppose there's always an opportunity to squeeze in some small amount of work here and there or something like that, but that's really never the way these things work out. I mean, a small amount of work could be like saying, well, you know, we're not even close to hitting OY on haddock, so why don't we just raise the cap and hold everything else constant and just, you know, let the fleet catch, you know, the amount and manage it and monitor it. That would be pretty simple and wouldn't require a lot of work. But my guess is that's probably not the way this framework's going to unfold. So, I mean, at some point there will be an opportunity to get some technical work done on this. It's really, in terms of determining what percentage or amount of the haddock TAC should be allocated to the herring fishery, that's probably groundfish technical team work that can be done while the herring plan development team may be working on the amendment. But once we get that range of alternatives approved for Amendment 5 in January, I mean, that's really when the PDT's work really gets started. The 4 to 6 months following that January council meeting, putting together the draft EIS is just an inordinate amount of work for the plan development team. There's not a lot of committee work. So if there's some way that maybe the technical work can get done by the groundfish plan development team, and then during that time after January, the committee work can get done for the decision making, you know, it might be possible. But I just think everybody needs to be clear so that there aren't any unrealistic expectations for either January or April. It's a tall order, and what we've really done with this, you know, discussion is taken a huge plate full of issues and just thrown more on top of it. So it's, you know, it's hard to really foresee how we're going to get it all done in the same time frame.
Anyone else? Anybody else on the council? Okay. Everybody familiar with the motion as amended? Okay, I'll go to the audience. Anything further from the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Thirteen in favor, opposed. One opposed. No abstentions. Motion carries 13-1. Moving on, we'll move right into the SSC report. SSC report.